Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Big Ten Media Days wrap up Thursday in Chicago. First time for new Michigan man Kyle Whittingham. He'll meet with the media around 1 o'clock. Nebraska's Matt Rhule and Indiana's Kurt Cignetti will bookend the podium sessions today. We're 37 days away from Ohio State hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Buckeyes begin training camp next Thursday. They'll open the first three camp practices to the fans. The Fan will be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. In soccer, MLS All-Stars beat All-Stars from Liga MX 4-3 in last night's MLS All-Star game in Charlotte. The Columbus Crew look to make it two straight this coming Saturday night. Black and gold are at Inter-Miami FC at 7:30. And in baseball, the Ohio Cubs headed back to Cleveland. Guardians scored four in the fifth last night to beat the Reds 6-1 in Cincinnati. Cleveland wins the season series and will have the day off before hosting Arizona this weekend. The Reds welcome the Pirates to Cincinnati tonight at 7:10. Hear that game after the Buckeyes show right here on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in and he's handed me papers.
Yeah.
And then,
it's a rundown.
And then he said, "You see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me."
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Loaded up on a Thursday edition of program. And your emails will come your way as we open that mailbag coming up at 10 o'clock. Mr. Feinbaum drops by at 10:30, fresh off of SEC Media Days. His thoughts on what he's heard from the Big Ten through the first 2 days of Big Ten Media Days will be interesting, no doubt. 11 o'clock, 20 most interesting programs, shifts still to the south. To Ole Miss as they look to have a real team but a new coach, and certainly one of the more interesting teams to pay attention to this season. Speaking of paying attention to things this season, I noticed something yesterday with Ohio State's media availability, and it's something that we've touched on a couple of times over the course of this summer, and that is the relative disrespect that is out there in the college football and in the professional football world for Julian Sain, and I don't get it. I don't know where it comes from. We've touched on this before. I've seen mock drafts that don't have him in the first round. I see people doubting his ability in big games. I don't get any of it. The kid in his first year as a starter finished fourth in the Heisman. He completed 77% of his passes, 3,610 yards, 32 touchdowns, 8 picks. Yeah, there's a tough pick in the Miami game. That can happen from time to time. But as first year seasons go, he exceeded even the wildest expectations of anybody around here. And really, as first year starting quarterback, his first year here was every bit as good as the two other like redshirt freshman-y first time starters. And I'm talking about CJ and Justin. When they had their first opportunity, and both those guys had incredible first year seasons, redshirt freshman seasons. Saying in year two, enters in a spot that is both comfortable physically, comfortable mentally, and comfortable from the sense that this is his team. And I think whatever becomes of the Buckeyes in 2026, this will be the Saiyan season. That's how we're going to look at this season. How great he is will dictate how great this team is. Now, you could say, well, Bo, that applies to any quarterback on any team. Yeah, it largely does. But in this specific case, I think it's even more so because of the losses on the defensive side of the ball and the reality that I think the offense is going to have to score a ton of points, especially early while that defense gets its sea legs under them. If you're curious, the last few times Ryan Day has had a quarterback who has entered fall camp as the unquestioned starter, it has happened three times, but it's been a minute since we've had this because we've had quarterback competitions into fall, even though we knew
for example, Will Howard was going to be the quarterback. He wasn't named the starter. Even last year with Julian, it took a minute for him to be named the starter. Even with CJ, it took a minute, and it was obvious that he was going to be a starter. So the last three times that Ryan Day has had a quarterback enter fall camp as the unquestioned starter, it's gone pretty, pretty well. CJ Stroud in 2022, 66%, 36, 88, 41 touchdowns, 6 picks, lost in the national semifinal. That's the Georgia game. Justin Fields in 2020, this is the COVID season, to say the least. Justin had a lot on his mind. He's trying to save the season because the Big Ten commissioner wanted to punt it down the road. He did save the season. He ended up playing 8 games, 70% completions, 2,100 yards, 22 touchdowns, 6 picks, lost in the national championship game to Alabama. The last one before that was Dwayne Haskins. He was the first one that Ryan had that was the unquestioned starter. Now, I said going into camp, not going into spring. Remember, Dwayne was battling with Joe in 18 in the spring, and then Joe transferred in May. Haskins took the job and was the unquestioned starter going into 2018, and he had maybe the best pure passing season in the history of Ohio State football. 70% completions, 48-31, 50 touchdowns, and 8 picks for Dwayne Haskins that one year. I say all of that to say this: what do you think this kid is capable this year? My hunch is a lot. I see a kid who walked through the halls of the Capone Hilton in downtown Chicago yesterday quite confident. I saw a kid who looked bigger. I heard his head coach say, just look in his eyes, he's got a little bit of a different look. My guess is he's taken notes of some of the things that folks have said about him from a pro evaluation standpoint. I'm sure he's heard some of the whispers about an inability to pick up in short yardage with his feet. He's heard all of those things, and he's put in the work, and now he's here and he's ready. And I think he's the key to all of this, and I think he's going to have a massive season. Now, there's a lot of people in the college world that give him his just due of respect. He's been a lot of these first-team All-American lists. He was first-team All-Big Ten last week or earlier this week when those preseason polls came out. So the people that watch this sport are aware of what he's capable of. I think the pro world is going to be very aware of what he's capable of by the time this season is done. I would be shocked, guys, if he does not have a massive season. I think he needs to have a massive season in order for this team to reach its ultimate goal, because I do think there's going to be a little bit of a step back defensively. So when you think about this season, for me, it's the saying season, and we'll see what he's capable of. And my bet is it's going to be a lot.
Yeah, I think when you say the defense taking a step back, we're just so ingrained to think that that's going to be disappointing. But there was really no place you could have gone for that defense, because you can't go any higher than one. When we do higher or lower on Wednesdays, it's number one, and that's about as good as you can get. Yeah. So all-time historic defense was last season. And I think what most people in football, because college football, like you said, the people that watch the sport from week-to-week basis, that follow up on the stats, that see Julian Sain play every single week, understand that this is special. Mm-hmm. And those who just kind of parachute into the big games, they see probably a little underwhelming when you think about all the hype that was with Julian last year. If it was Texas week one, and then my guess is for everybody outside this listening audience and the sound of my voice, you tuned out the Buckeyes. You saw them every week roll through cupcakes. And then it was Big Ten championship game. You said, all right, well, let's see how this looks. And because we are really only, and we at the Royal, we are focused on the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You see a quarterback that disappointed, but you don't take into consideration how good that Indiana defense was. Similarly with Miami, you see that pick six and you go, oh, well, it's not great from what I've heard about this Julian kid. And that's the only thing you take from what was 12 games of great play, of statistically historic play out of an Ohio State quarterback. And then you think to everything that you had said, everything that you've heard about Julian this offseason. Oh, and you get another year of Jeremiah.
Yep.
You think all of that with Julian, how better he's gotten, how much smarter he is as a football player, bigger, stronger, faster. Same thing with Jeremiah. I don't know how much that android, that football android, can get bigger, stronger, faster. but my guess is they'll figure it out. And so this does think, just by common sense and then by what you see and hear from Julian, from everybody else who's around him every day, that this is only going to get better. And what that looks like is an incredible what if.
Yeah.
What makes the narrative around Julian Sain so crazy too is everything a quarterback needs to help him be successful is there. He has a stud receiver.
Yep.
In Jeremiah Smith. He has a good running game. with Bo Jackson, who had 1,000 yards as a freshman. He has an offensive line that is returning four of the five starters. It's very experienced. And the one starter that's gone is the one that most people pointed the finger at as the weak link last year.
Yeah.
So maybe that hurts Julian, especially when people are projecting him to the next level, which is kind of crazy to me because he's going to be playing light with players like that at the next level. But Julian Sain is set up to have a monster season for Ohio State.
Reese, you said something that I agree, and you said something, Reese, that I thought was pretty interesting because I think you were exactly right. People saw Julian last year in the Texas game. They rechecked back in with the Buckeyes at the Michigan game, you know, obviously, and then Indiana. They didn't see him a lot. They're going to see a lot of him this year because you are at Texas in week two, Illinois and Iowa back-to-back, end of September, early October. I could see how that might slip through the cracks a little bit, but those are some interesting games, especially that game out at Iowa. But starting on October 17th, it's three games in 4 weeks. At Indiana, that's your big noon. That very well could also be a college game day and all of that. Then you're at USC. That one will be in prime time. Then you have Oregon here at noon. That means that you're going to play, in the course of 4 weeks, two teams that I would better in the top seven or eight of the country in 3 weeks, and USC is going to be in the teens. And then you have Michigan to end the season, then it ramps all up again. So the point is, you bring up a very good point. He disappeared from people's consciousness for weeks on end last year. That won't happen this year. He will be seen. This team will be seen. There's a lot of layers to this. And obviously Jeremiah Smith is front and center. But the one thing that I took away from the comments yesterday is this team is going to score some points in a big, big way. And in some of the, because of the toughness of this schedule, they're going to need to score a little as the defense gets going. You'll hear from Ryan Day. You'll hear from Julian Sain. We have the final day of Big Ten Media Days today. Mr. Feinbaum coming by at 10:30. And, of course, Ole Miss 20 Most Interesting coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. We're off and running on a Thursday edition. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Play This Summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Scott McMullen leads the Buckeyes past Penn State in a 2003 classic.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the rest of the day, we'll see some of those fair weather clouds trying to pop up, but we'll call it mostly sunny for the afternoon. Highs reach the lower 80s. Real nice day out there. Mostly clear skies tonight, 63 for a low. For your Friday, partly sunny skies as some high clouds gradually stream in from the west. We'll see highs right around 86. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
And homes in Columbus are under constant attack by pests like termites, ants, mice. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Home Solutions Service Program. Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection, one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Here's the beauty of this. It's on the books. They show up. It's taken care of before you have a problem. It's perfect. Trust me on this. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. If this is the Sain season, then he has done everything in his power to have a big one. Here was his head coach, Ryan Day, on Julian in year two.
Julian Sain, and now year three with us, year two as a starter, has a different look in his eye. I said before, you know, he had great success last year. He won his first start ever, home against Texas in a big, you know, top five matchup, won a rivalry game in the sideways snow, but then, came up short at the end of the year. We all did, but when you look in his eye now, you see a different person. You see a different body. He's worked hard. He's gotten stronger. He's found his voice even more, and he's got a great look in his eye, and I think he's poised for a great season.
It's an interesting part. He's found his voice. Julian is really quick. he's been really, he's usually very short and very direct. You ask him a question, you get a direct answer. And some of that is just the inexperience of everything that comes with this. Sometimes he did peer a little bit wide eye, but in the, I just always go back to the Texas game, and we came on here the Monday after they beat Texas, and we said, well, gosh, I think he could have done more. I think he could have handled a lot more. He was capable of a lot more in that Texas game, but that's what it took in order to win the game. And then they built it as it went along. There is one wrinkle to Julian's game this year, and that is a new offensive coordinator. Arthur Smith comes in. He's worked with a plethora of different quarterback styles and quarterback abilities in the National Football League. And now he gets a chance to work with Mr. Saiyan. Here's Ryan Day on Arthur working with Julian.
When you go from coaching Aaron Rodgers to a college quarterback, you can certainly imagine what that has been like for Arthur. But, man, Julian keeps up, and it's been fun to watch. So excited to see where this goes this year with him.
It's another part of this thing in terms of what the offense can be. Let's hear from Julian himself on where he thinks he grew most this offseason.
I think this offseason I grew a lot in my physical traits, so I think I'm throwing the ball harder. Still growing my game in the processing side, because, you know, when you have coaches like Coach Day and Coach Smith who have been around great quarterbacks and who know the game really well, it's very helpful as a quarterback to be able to process things and kind of train your brain.
He was asked yesterday at Big Ten Media Days if he feels more comfortable, more responsibility also heading into year two.
I think playing quarterback at Ohio State is its own responsibility. It's not, you know, a certain like second year start. It's extremely it's a high pressure situation, but that's why you come to Ohio State is to become, you know, you play in big games, be a quarterback here.
Usually in year two, you're going to loosen the reins a little bit, and I think we're going to see that a little bit with Julian. He talked about that, in fact, with a little bit more control he's going to have under center with Arthur Smith.
You know, Coach Smith has done a lot of things where, you know, the quarterback's getting up there. We have multiple plays called, and quarterback, you're able to make the decision on what you want to run and what the defense is giving you and what the look is. So it's fun as a quarterback to have the responsibility line of scrimmage.
Now, if there's a singular person who's going to have the biggest impact on Julian's success, it's the best player in college football. That's Jeremiah Smith. He talked about his quarterback as well. Let's start with number four on Julian and what got better.
Yeah, I mean, Julian, he's got bigger, he got faster, he got stronger, becoming more of a leader. Being a dog and having more swag to himself about himself. So that's one thing about him that stuck out.
In terms of the connective tissue between the two of them, well, you're now 3 years working consecutively on that. The last 2 years, primarily just the two of them. Here's Jeremiah on that connection.
Yeah, it's been good. Me and Julian have been with each other all summer. Coach Mick had us together working out with each other, pushing each other to a very high level. And, you know, we've both been, you know, stepping out of our comfort zone, pushing each other, pushing everybody in the program to, you know, get to our level. So that's what we've been doing this offseason.
Week two against Texas, which is obviously more than a month away, and we got a full camp to get through. Early on in that game, what will you be looking for to lead you to believe that he's even better than he was a year ago?
Making good decisions on third down. However the distance might be, whether it's third and long, third and short, third and a yard, whatever Julian's decision-making is, I think it's going to be the first barometer. They're going to run to set up the pass. And so I think for the first 2 months of the season, you're going to get a lot of Bo Jackson and Isaiah West. And we haven't talked about him because you didn't see him in the spring game because they were both dealing with, I want to say both had shoulder procedures. But this is going to be an Arthur Smith offense that you're going to have tight ends and running backs carry the load the bulk of the way. And I think really Julian's going to get to Peacock later on in the season, but in big moments, it's going to be, can he make the best decisions possible for the team to advance him down the field?
I want to see in the Texas game when they bring pressure.
I want to bomb. I don't think I'm getting it much.
When they bring pressure and when they get to him, his decision making, because it seems like that's what got to him a little bit against Indiana and against Miami, was when the pressure came, maybe his eyes got big and he didn't see things like he should have and could have. So that's what I want to see. That was the really only complaint I had from Julian Saiyan in year one, was when the pressure came, sometimes he didn't read the play quick enough and get it out on time.
Yeah, I think he thought more than he, as a quarterback, you don't want to think, you want to just react, right? Like, you've done the homework in the lead up to the game. You've taken all the reps. You've done all the things. You should have the answers to the test. And what you hope that happens when these things happen, you've seen them before, you prepared for them, and the ball's out. I think in both, I'm not here to relitigate the Indiana and Miami games, but if you were going to have those back, it felt to me like I was surprised that Ohio State never shifted into fifth gear offensively. And I mean, not just like, just let's go, like just go points. Let's also have a little bit of tempo to us. I mean, there just weren't enough possessions. I remember doing the math in both of those games and thinking like, God, they only have one possession left the way this is going. They're just putting themselves to where their margin for error is. And they coached that way last year all year, right? We talked about that. Fewer plays in the huddle, snapping it with 4 seconds in the third quarter. They never really went all season long. It was almost like get up 2 scores and then we're good is kind of what it felt like. Get up 3 scores and then we're good. Well, so all of a sudden when they needed to be able to go fast, they just weren't comfortable doing it and weren't great at it and couldn't protect. And he saw a bunch of things that he'd never seen before. And those things happen. In year two, it'll be very, very different. We have a very, very interesting poll question today that I saw that asked the question. We heard from Jeremiah Smith, and we'll talk about him obviously a lot here over the next month and over the end of the week. But it says something to the effect of, what does Jeremiah Smith, will he be the greatest? What does he have to do to be the greatest, or will he be the greatest Buckeye at the end of the season in history? I think that's it. Something to that effect. Yes or no? So if you take that question, can Jeremiah Smith be the greatest Ohio State Buckeye of all time? What will it take? Universally, it feels like, I shouldn't say universally, but the majority of the time when you ask the question, who's the greatest Ohio State football player of all time, the answer comes back Orlando Pace. That's what I hear more often than anything else. You get a little Arch, you get a little Eddie. There's some other guys who pepper through there, some defensive stalwarts, obviously. There's a lot of those, some great receivers. There's great everything. But it's usually O'Pace is the one that most people say. Well, what did O'Pace have? He was the number one pick in the draft. He was universally the best position player at his position maybe ever in the history of college football. So in order for Jeremiah to trump that, I think he just needs statistically similar to what he's been doing. If he does that, it'll be a consensus first team All-American. But in order to have that trump card, he probably needs to win the Heisman, and he probably needs to be the best player on a second national championship team. Like, if all of a sudden his 3 years are done and he's a 3-time consensus All-American, he's a Heisman Trophy winner, and he's a 2-time national champion, that'd do it. That's lofty. That's lofty. But all of that stuff is well within their reach as a team and his reach individually. It's all there. So when's the last time that we had somebody with the ability to maybe do that, and I give you that list of credentials and you go, yeah, that's in play? I mean, it's been a minute since we've had one of these. So, I mean, like Braxton, had he been able to play his final season on a number one team in the country, and had then, now you're talking about it, 4-year starter, 3-time Big Ten offensive MVP, all of that stuff. But he's got this opportunity in front of him to do it. And it's a question that you ask it and you go, well, that's silly. How could we possibly quantify that? But of course, Sports Talk Radio, and this is what we do. But you can actually kind of come up with a case that's very attainable for him.
So it was probably this time, what, the summer of 2014, where you guys were having that conversation about Braxton, where is the last Buckeye player that could do everything that you'd mention, be a Heisman contender, win, you know, become the best player in the Big Ten, throw for 35 touchdowns, run for 15 more, and then I think like mid-August he tears his shoulder.
Yeah,
and then
it was
you go,
a funeral, man.
Well, now what?
Yeah,
this is it for Jeremiah. And if everything you listed Jeremiah accomplishes, there's no reason this team's not also winning the national championship.
Yeah, it's right there for him.
Because they're running through that gauntlet of the Big Ten. He's having Heisman moments in those kind of games that everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Julian's probably on stage with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone's got to throw you the ball to catch it and make all those incredible, insane catches that we know Jeremiah is capable of.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that all sets up to be historic for both players. And then there's the trickle down effect to where, how does that affect Brandon Innes? Like, what's Chris Henry Jr. look like in his first season if Jeremiah is getting all that kind of love and then all that kind of attention?
I don't know how you could ever compare a wide receiver to an offensive lineman, but I think Jeremiah Smith is probably already the greatest wide receiver in Ohio State history. And if he goes out and has another season, if he just puts up the same numbers that he has the last 2 years, which I think he'll probably do more this year, but if he just puts up the same numbers, he destroys every Ohio State wide receiver record in the book.
Yes. Yep.
And if he can go out and throw a Heisman on there and another national championship, and he would be the best player. I mean, he might have been the best player as a freshman on that team. That, you know, that's tough, though, on a team that was so veteran-laden. But he would be the best player on this team.
Mm-hmm.
He's right there in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it's when's the last time you could actually ask that question with a straight face? I mean, it's been a long time. So, I mean, Braxton in 14 had that to him, but he hadn't accomplished the things individually or as a team that Jeremiah has already accomplished. Braxton was never a consensus first-team All-American. Like, that hasn't happened. Jeremiah's already done that twice. So he's laid the groundwork for the greatest career in Ohio State history, and that's one of the other things that's at stake this season. In a season of which, look, you go win the national title. We do that all the time. Very blessed around here. Well, that's the feeling again this year. And when you think about the Big Ten, you think about what happened yesterday, you had the Bucks and you had the Ducks coming from very different places. But would it surprise anybody if those two teams played for a national championship? It certainly wouldn't surprise me. They were the featured talking points yesterday. You'll hear from Ryan Day, Dan Lanning coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
Slope and Juice.
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
Well, here's what's up on a Thursday edition of the program. Big Ten Media Day is rolling on over at the Capone Hilton in Chicago. It's interesting how they do it. So they give you kind of a co-headliners every day. So day one, you had USC, you had Penn State, you had Illinois. Bielema is kind of a headliner unto himself, but you had a couple of headliners there. Then yesterday, you had the big boys. Midweek, you had Ohio State and Oregon yesterday. And then today, you'll have Michigan and you will have Indiana. So Cignetti at the podium today, the defending national champion. Still hard to wrap your head around all of that, but yes, it did happen, and they're not going anywhere. I do believe, though, that the two best teams in this league heading into this year, and this isn't reinventing the wheel, are the Ducks and the Bucks. I think Oregon probably has more pressure going into this season than any team in the country. Dan Lanning, you do the preseason all Big Ten teams. You do the R-Lads. You look at their depth chart. I don't know a team that has more coming back on defense, more talent on defense. And then they get this gift from the football gods of Dante Moore coming back for one more season. They are as set up as they've been to win it. Buckeyes are always set up to win it. And it wouldn't surprise me if these two teams played for a national championship. Both Ryan Day and Dan Lanning were available yesterday over in Chicago. Let's start with Coach Day on a monster season that's ahead of his team.
Now, every coach is going to come up here and say that they've had a great summer. I've never seen a coach come up and for media day and say, well, we didn't have a very good summer. But we have had a great summer. But what matters is what we're going to do with that. And what Mick Marotti and his staff do during the summer is the backbone of our program. But our players also know all that matters is what we put on the field. And so as we get to work here next week and get on the field for preseason camp, it's an important preseason camp. The season that we have ahead of us is going to be a monster, and we're fired up about that.
Schedule's brutal, as we've talked about. Probably the most difficult Buckeye schedule we've seen in quite some time. Some of that's just blind luck, like teams elevating that previously hadn't. The Indiana explosion is certainly a part of that. Old days, you'd look at that and go, okay, Indiana into Oregon. All right, fine. Then that's a pretty big tester that you got there. That's not going to be the case anymore, where you're going to have those three games in 4 weeks that are all pretty big. Ryan Day did say his team is motivated to try to do something they didn't do last year, and that is win the Big Ten.
To me, it's always about winning the rivalry game first and then winning a national championship. Now, we want to win the conference, but we want to win the conference to put us in the best position to win the national championship. That's, to me, what the most important thing is, and everything matters. Every single seed matters, every ounce matters, every inch matters. So we are very motivated to win the conference.
Yeah, I think he gave you the real truth right out of the gates. Win the rivalry game, win the national championship game, and if a Big Ten title happens in conjunction with that, okay, great. It would not surprise me at all if these two teams played for a national title, talking about Ohio State and Oregon. It's theoretically possible that they could play three times this season, once here on November 7th, once for a Big Ten championship, and again for a national championship. I don't know if that's good for anybody to have college teams playing three times, but it wouldn't at all surprise me if these two did. I think the most pressure in the country is split amongst two coaches, and I think it's Dan Lanning and I think it's Steve Sarkisian. They have the guys that most people presume will be the top two picks in next year's NFL draft at quarterback. Both teams have a ton of talent. Neither guy has reached the ultimate mountaintop. Lanning has gotten closer than Sark, although Sark did get to a national semifinal a couple of years ago. But if there was ever a time for Oregon to win it all, it does feel like this is that time. Here is Lanning from yesterday talking about the experience and talent he has coming back.
Yeah, I think every one of those guys felt like there was an opportunity for them to grow and something left out on the table that they really want to try to take advantage of. And, you know, nobody's going to have higher expectations than we will, but there's a difference in this team and last year's team. We had a lot of talent last year. Now a lot of that talent has experience, and I think that experience is invaluable, especially in a conference like the Big Ten with the opponents we have to play.
And we can have this conversation about Oregon because Dante Moore is coming back. I think most people thought, and quite honestly, he probably would have been the number two pick in the draft. And he went out in last year's NFL draft. He didn't. It stayed. So he's going to be the one or two pick likely in this year's NFL draft. I think the other thing that's interesting about him is, like, if the kid from Washington actually transfers, is Moore in the NFL right now?
Yeah.
I feel like that.
I think that's what derailed the whole thing for Damon Williams.
Right?
Because he was probably headed just north to Eugene or south to Eugene.
But yeah.
And, then Dante Moore comes back, and yeah, now he's back at Washington. Dylan Raiola's there, but you're not having this conversation if Dylan Raiola's your starter.
No, you're not. No.
I hear Dan Lanning talk about that yesterday, and he talked about it a lot. And it reminds me of the last three national champions.
Yeah.
Michigan, what'd they do in 2023? They brought a ton of people back. It was a very experienced, senior-laden team. Ohio State in 2024. We were shocked when all of those guys came back to go after a national championship. And then Indiana last year, they had a very veteran group.
Yeah,
I mean, Oregon on paper has always been the team, I think, for this year that you thought, That might be the best team in the country, especially with Dante Moore coming back. And man, you hear Dan Lanning talk like that. And Dan Lanning may have had a bullseye on him anyway. He's got a huge bullseye on him now. They've got to go out, and they have got to perform well this year.
Also, the work they've done in the portal, like they went out and got Coy Parrish, the can do it all, you know, Swiss Army knife from Minnesota, and like that had to cost them some money. Keeping Dante Moore, Dylan Raiola is not coming to play for free. Like, there's a lot put into this, and the return on the investment, I can't imagine, has been there for them.
It looks a lot like 2024 Ohio State, honestly. Like, where they went in the portal was very calculated. If you just pull up their R lads too deep, I mean, it's four transfer starters. Everybody else returns. It's just four. It's Parrish. It's a nickelback that they brought in. It's a right tackle and it's a slot receiver. That's it. Everybody else are their guys returning. So yeah, they are the team. This should be their year. They're set up for that. Now there's a lot of folks like us and a bunch of other places around the country that are set up to say, well, it's our year too. But from the Oregon perspective, it feels like this should be their year for all of the reasons that we've mentioned, but mostly because of Dante Moore. Here is Lanning on his quarterback.
I'll start talking with about our quarterback, Dante Moore. Obviously, a guy that I feel like has been around for almost as long as I've been around at Oregon. Took a little pit stop somewhere else and then came back and joined us. But obviously had an unbelievable year last year and is really obviously a special quarterback. But what makes Dante so special is who he is as a person, seeing the community outreach that he does, the leader that he is for his teammates, the work that he's done, and obviously a guy that can make a mature decision about what's best for his future and where he's headed and what he wants it to look like and how he has some business that he wants to complete. So really excited that he gets to be really somebody that's showcasing Oregon this week and here at Big Ten meetings.
I'll tell you what's interesting about all of this with Dante. statistically, he did not have the season Julian did. He's 72, 35, 30, and 10. Statistically, Julian was better. And I'd be interested to see him side by side. They list Dante at 6'3", 206. Be interested to see those two stand by side by side to see what the actual size difference is between the two of them. But this is the heavyweight fight of the Big Ten. It's of these teams. Now, Cignetti's going to have something to say about it. He talks today. He brings in Josh Hoover from TCU. What does all of that look like? Can Lincoln Riley, you know, bring his team up and elevate them? What's it look like for Matt Campbell year one at Penn State? Okay, fine. But just on rosters, these are the two rosters. It's Ohio State, it's Oregon, and then there's a gap to everybody else. And how big is that gap? I think as we start the season, it's pretty big between. And I have full respect for Cignetti. Never doubt the guy again. I'm sure they'll be a playoff team. I'd be shocked if I haven't looked at their schedule. I'd be shocked if they don't go 10-2 at worst. He's going to be in the mix. Wouldn't surprise me if he went 11-1 somehow. I'm never doubting the dude again. He's that good. But Josh Hoover is not Julian Sain, and he is not Dante Moore. And because of those two guys and because of what the buy-in that those two programs have had in roster building at Ohio State and at Oregon, if I gave you these two or the field, it's one of those ones where you'd give it some serious thought. And I'm talking about two teams in one conference. Like, these two teams are ready to go. They're ready to go, and they're ready to compete at the highest level and go win national championships. And it's possible that they'll have to play each other three times in order to do it. We had NFL training camp starting down in Cincinnati and up in Cleveland. I got an eye on what happened at Browns camp yesterday. I was able to take that in. Obviously, some heated moments down in Cincinnati, and then devastation, it appears, with the injury to Shamar Stewart. We'll catch you up on everything that happened in day one of training camp in Cincinnati and Cleveland coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Join the fan weeknights at 6 for the Buckeye Show. And if you're asking if it's just a bunch of homers rooting for all things Ohio State,
yes, yes it is.
Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes, the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
The uncle you never knew you had.
The friends you kind of wish you didn't.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Ohio State fans, your first look at the 2026 Buckeyes is here. Join us August 6th through the 8th, the Woody Hayes Athletic Center for Ohio State football training camp presented by Safe Light, Bob's Discount Furniture. Watch practice live, get autographs, take photos with select players, experience the start of a new season up close. Tickets are limited and going fast. Just $48 general admission, upgrade to VIP for shaded seating, refreshments, and more. Secure your spot today at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. Don't miss your chance to be part of Buckeye Nation's kickoff to 2026, and we will be out there as well, broadcasting live, which is always something we look forward to. So Todd Monken was available prior to practice of training camp yesterday. So he was available, then he had practice, and then he actually joined Nathan and I on Cleveland Browns Daily, but he did his press availability before. He was asked a bunch of questions about the quarterback situation. Let's start with this, and then I'll tell you what I saw. Here is Monken on the QB situation.
Yeah, nothing's really changed. We anticipate alternating. First of all four quarterbacks are going to compete. They all won't get equal reps. Obviously, we will alternate just like we did in the spring, Deshaun and Shador with the ones.
In terms of how he might decide who starts at quarterback or when, here was Monken's answer to that.
The easiest way for me to say that, and it still won't stop you from asking, not you particularly, but everybody in general, is the first game. We're going to have a start of the first game, right? I mean, ultimately, I'm not going to decide who the starter is. They decide by their play. Their play decides who the starter is. I don't have any preconceived notions of how they played in the past or how they're going to play. I only can, with my eyes, judge. And guys got to play well around them. I think we've shored up some things up front. We've added some weapons on the perimeter, so I think that's going to help. But they'll decide who plays. I don't decide who plays. The players decide who plays.
All right, so if you're looking for a date, if this continues on, you're talking about a bare minimum of August 24th. So that is the Monday before the final preseason game. He'll have a starter by then, I would think, absolutely. If you're looking for a date where you'll have a very good clue of who it's going to be, if it's not done prior to this, I would bet on August 20th. Now, August 20th is their joint practice with Buffalo. You would want your number one quarterback getting most of the reps in that game, because that'll be the closest you're going to get to real NFL games. Monken also said that both quarterbacks are going to play, and that the starters are going to play in their preseason games. So I was there yesterday, and what they did was they ran two fields kind of at the same time. So Deshaun went with the ones, one offense versus one defense on the right field, and then it was Shedeur Sanders with the two offense against the two defense on the left field. They were working on early install, and they were working on quick games. So the ball was out quick. There was very little down the field. I think Shedeur maybe hit one deep ball to Casey Concepcion, but that was in 7-on-7. It wasn't even on an 11-on-11. So an 11-on-11, I don't think they threw the ball down the field at all. So what would happen is on the right field, you'd see a play, and then on the left field, you'd see the number twos that execute the exact same play. So it was almost, it was really a perfect way to evaluate quarterbacks. It was like boom, 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 boom. Yesterday was not a day for the offense. None of the offense was particularly strong yesterday. It's hard when you're not in pads too, because offensive linemen can't really block. They can't do the type of things. They were consistently, the defensive line was consistently in the face of the two quarterbacks. Deshaun threw two picks. He threw one where he was kind of rolling left, and receiver was running a crosser, and he just didn't put it out in front. And Denzel Ward, who just got that new contract signed, just jumped it and sprinted in front and jumped it and picked it off. Talked to Todd afterwards, and he said, like, that was the right decision, just the wrong execution. You got to lead that out in front. He didn't have a problem with that one. The second one was a little bit more troubling, where he's kind of shoveled up into the pocket. They didn't have a go route to occupy the corner on the backside, so the corner was just kind of sitting there, and Deshaun just kind of threw it, you know, back the other side and didn't see the corner sitting there waiting. Todd did say that he had a day with the Ravens where the quarterbacks threw eight picks. So, like, these things happen. I don't think he's in full-on panic mode of it, but all of the pieces do matter. On the other side, Shedeur missed some open stuff. Again, neither one was particularly crisp or clean at all. It was kind of a struggle for both of them, guys, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think the Watson interceptions, were they back-to-back?
They were.
So that's not great, but day one of training camp on the practice field, pads aren't even really on. I mean, the shoulder pads, no, and the helmet, so they're not.
Not even shoulder pads.
So
just not, helmet.
The thrown against air thing's bad. But look, I don't. As a Browns fan, my expectations aren't very high for this quarterback room. So I think it's a good thing what Munkin's doing, just giving them constant reps, splitting them up, having them go as much as humanly possible, because you've got, what, now 9 practices in the next 10 days. Before, yeah, you'd mentioned that joint practice with the Buffalo Bills before the second preseason game that they'll have. There's only 3 preseason contests this year. So, you know, it feels like you got a full month, but you don't really have that much time to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm okay. I don't love him saying they're going to roll all 4 quarterbacks. They're not.
So good. Just to jump in on that, they're not rolling all 4. So, like, yesterday in the 11-on-11s, Dylan took 2 snaps.
Okay, that's they don't need to give Dylan and
Taylen Green didn't take any. Nah. So, yeah, I guess when he says that, it's a little bit in the semantics. All 4 are just going to get reps, but Deshaun got all of the reps with the ones yesterday. Shedeur only got reps with the 2 yesterday, and then today those 2 will be inverted. So today Shedeur will get all the ones, Deshaun will get all the 2s. Dylan is the 3, and then Taylen's the 4.
How did Denzel Boston look?
Well, he looked great.
Good.
He looked great. He ran primarily with the 2s, along with Casey Concepcion, and then they had Isaiah Bond and Judy with the 1s. The other thing that was, I mean, just, this is a little bit more like not surface area conversation. DeJuan Jones was the starting left tackle to start. And so we know, like, if healthy, how great he can be. And we know that certainly Spencer Fano can play left, right, guard. He can play almost anywhere on the offensive line. So I thought that was very interesting, and he did tell us afterwards that he is going to kind of flip-flop Fano and DeJuan the same way he's flipping the quarterbacks. So Fano will be first-team left tackle today. DeJuan will continue to be the second-team left tackle. So he's working that out, and he's working out center and right guard.
Did we have 370-pound DeJuan Jones, or did we have 400-pound DeJuan Jones?
He looked great, man, and I've seen him a lot in the facility this summer. He looks really good. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see where all of that goes. But then we're going to get a good look today at the other side of it. So, and maybe some more shots down the field, which would open things up a little bit. Really quickly in Cincinnati, things got pretty heated down there in their training camp. Don't ever put your hands on Ja'Marr Chase. Like, what are you doing? Do not put your hands on him. Like, he's untouchable. And then the Shamar Stewart leg injury looks awful. Awful, the video of that. So yeah. That is a massive blow for them.
If you get queasy at things like that, don't go look for it.
So no. I know this is red yarn on a corkboard, but the Browns hosted Jadeveon Clowney yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Any chance he gets out of Ohio before the end of the weekend?
I don't think so.
Good.
It's a great point out of you. One way or another, I think he probably will be.
He had 8.5 sacks last year. Like,
he
that's
did.
Productive.
Yeah, he did. Wanted to get this in the first hour as well. I know we're up against it. I'll apologize to Fish later for this. Saw the news yesterday with the Blue Jackets with doing the simulcast with the television product on the radio. And that means the end of Bob McElliott. I don't know Bob. I know his voice. I know how hard he works. I know his passion. I appreciate him so much from what he's done through these years, going all the way back with George Mathews. But I don't know him personally. Does not mean that I do not hurt for him, you can't acknowledge just how much that sucks. But Bake, I know you do know Bob personally and have a few thoughts on this.
Yeah, Bob is he's one of the best out there. He's great at what he does, but he's an even better human. And I don't feel like any organization is better off when they lose humans like Bob McElligott. I have never seen a broadcaster, Bo,
yeah,
who goes out of his way like Bob does to help the younger generation. Like, the younger generation may be there and they may not be asking. He'll go up to them and talk to them and ask them and offer his help with things. So just one of the best. It's a bummer for the Blue Jackets because you lose a quality human like that. And it's a bummer for the fans because the broadcast is never going to be the same, because even if you do more of a radio call, to make the radio sound good, it's not going to sound right on TV, and you're going to lose some of the brilliance of Jody Shelley. And yeah, if you just do a TV call and you're listening on the radio, you're not going to know what's going on exactly. So it's just I understand you lose the RSN money and all of that, but just a sad, sad day.
Yep. I would echo all of that, my friend. All right, second hour of the program coming up next. Mr. Feinbaum coming up at the bottom of the hour. We open up the mailbag next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser, and we're 1 month away from college football games, 37 days from the Buckeyes hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Ohio State's going to begin training camp next week. The fans going to be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. In the NFL, we're 1 week out from the Hall of Fame game between the Cardinals and Panthers. The Browns and Bengals continue camp practices Thursday. Cincinnati lost defensive end Shamar Stewart yesterday. He was carted off the field with a left knee injury. No word on the severity or how long he'll be out. Cleveland hosted free agent defensive end Jadeveon Clowney Wednesday. The 33-year-old Clowney had 8.5 sacks with the Cowboys last season. In baseball, the Guardians beat the Reds 6-1 last night. Cleveland takes the Ohio Cup back up 71. Guardians are a game and a half out of first place in the AL Central. Cleveland's off Thursday. They host Arizona Friday. Cincinnati looks to bounce back this evening, hosting Pittsburgh at 7:10. You can hear the Reds and the Pirates following the Buckeye Show right here on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a Thursday, 27 minutes from now, Mr. Feinbaum on the saber rattling from SEC Media Days last week and his thoughts of what he heard from Tony Petitti yesterday. Let's kick off the hour with the mailbag. Open it up, boys.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You got to get it up. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present Emails.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
All right, let's start with this one from Andrew. Hi, Bo, longtime listener, second time emailer. I had some time this summer to catch up on the podcast. Wanted to share some thoughts. First, on the Mount Rushmore of Columbus Athletes episode, I think I heard you mention you were in the NICU at the same time as Nick Foligno. I was, parenthetically. If so, God bless you and your family. My wife and I just left the NICU after 100 days and are finally starting our life with our newborn and feel overwhelmed but very blessed. Yeah, we didn't have 100 days. It was 2 weeks, but that's God bless you. It's scary, all of it. The good news, though, is when they come out, they're like ready to roll. They're on sleep schedules. They're on eat schedules. Like, Beamsy ended up being by far the easiest baby of our three, and a lot I attribute to that experience in the NICU at Riverside, which was awesome. On the Sorsby front, is there anything stopping a team from just signing him? Like, couldn't the Browns just call me 6'190", no athletic peak, and just say, hey, we want to sign you? Didn't Mark Wahlberg get signed by the Eagles in that movie, Invincible? No, they can't just sign him because he's not eligible to be signed. He did not declare, and so he's not eligible to be signed. And I also think just if an NFL team, like in the old Al Davis ways, wanted to fight for something like this, I just don't think that there's anybody in the NFL from an ownership standpoint that would want to take on the fight of it at this point if the NFL ruled him ineligible for the supplemental draft. Number three of you and the boys started playing the new college football game yet. It just finished a dynasty with Ohio State. They made Arch Manning essentially Mike Vick. Bo Jackson is awesome. He said he beat UCLA in the finals. Remember last year, I think it was like NC State or something like that.
Darling, for 2 years, the Wolfpack were.
They were. They really were. I haven't got into it yet. The boys have been playing it a little bit. They're still kind of in FIFA mode, though, a little bit. So they played it a little. I have not cracked it open yet. Maybe next week. Now to the meat of this long email. Did you or the fellows see Jill Klatt's All-Century team? Spoiler alert, no Buckeyes. Might make for a good segment as we wind down the summer and head into the football season. Sorry for the long email. Had some free time sitting in the NICU. All the best. Go Bucks. Go Browns. Andrew, thank you for the email. Did you guys talk about Klatt, his All-Century team?
No, I didn't see or hear anything about it until you just mentioned it in the email. And I'm looking at it now, and I don't know, just a quick scroll of this. Is okay, fine.
If you had to nominate one Buckeye to be on an all 2000s team, who would you nominate? You only could have one.
I mean, would it be a Bosa?
Is it Chase Young? Is it Bosa? I mean, Chase Young was a Heisman finalist.
Ezekiel Elliott?
Yeah, but he's not getting in over some of the other running backs. He's not getting in over Adrian Peterson.
And he's their all century running back.
Yeah, like Jeremiah.
Yeah, Jeremiah Marv.
Yeah, Jeremiah might be there by the time this season's over. Caleb Downs? Has there been a better safety in college football than Caleb Downs?
That's probably the one.
How the hell was Caleb Downs not on the All-Century team?
Who are the cornerbacks?
Well, Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed were there.
Yeah, but Polamalu did not have the college career that Caleb Downs did. That's based on what he was.
And so I do think with a lot of this, it's looking back and the names and where they played of NFL greats. So you can pick this apart, I think, pretty well with the, all right, they were great in the NFL. They weren't awesome in college, but they were players that were better at their positions in college.
Troy Polamalu is because he was a gold jacket. It's not because of what he did at USC. Caleb's the one. That would be the one that I would go with. This one from Max. I heard you talking about your trip to Montana. A few years ago on a visit to Glacier Park, we stayed at the Aspenwood B&B on Route 89 west of Browning. It didn't look like much, but it was comfortable, and the host fixed the best breakfast I've ever had in a motel or B&B. We enjoyed our visit to the Museum of the Plain Indians in Browning before heading up the east side of Glacier. Thanks for jogging some memories. Max, I'm glad you did that. Good people up there, and they need all the support that they can get, and a great deal of pride in their heritage. So I love to see that, and I'm not familiar with that, but very good job out of you for doing that. This one from Joseph. Subject is Montana, from Joe. My wife and I are going to Glacier National Park at the end of August, flying into Missoula, then working our way north to Columbia Falls. Can you recommend any destinations that are must-see, places that may not be in travel brochures? Your knowledge of Montana is exclusive. We've been to Bozeman, Yellowstone a few times and want to experience more of the state. Looking forward to your response, by the way. Thank you for your continued support of Highbank. Well, yeah, they're my guys. All right, Joe, so you're going into Missoula. So you're going to drive north, and you're going to go around the south end of Flathead Lake. I would need to know where you're staying. I don't know if you're staying in Columbia Falls or where you're staying, but either way, so Whitefish, where we were last Saturday, has basically, that's your, if you've been to Yellowstone, Big Sky, and all of that, that's their answer to that. So that's your, it feels like a mix of Aspen, Austin, Texas, and Los Angeles, or maybe Dallas, Texas, and Los Angeles is what that is. But it's a stunning town, great food. The Bulldog Saloon is awesome in downtown Whitefish, really cool old school place. But all sorts of great food there in Whitefish. In Glacier National Park, you've got to go to Many Glacier. Even if you can't stay there, you have to go there just to see it. You need to do Going to the Sun Highway. My hunch is that's on your list anyway. St. Mary's is kind of a cool spot on the other side, on the eastern side of the glacier. That would be something that you could stay there potentially if you wanted to. I would tell you too, like, depending on how much time you have, like, if you could rent a pontoon boat at Flathead Lake or Whitefish Lake, that's really fun to do and really cool. Both of those are really good. I think you got it pretty well sorted out. Missoula's a cool town too. They float the river. You get a tube and you can kind of float the Clark Fork, which goes right through downtown Missoula. Do not buy anything at the University of Montana, or you can't take my, I'll never read your emails again. We're not going to support those.
Did somebody send you a picture from a bar in Montana yesterday? I was looking for Hey Guys.
I don't know. Did I? Did they?
I'm trying to find it. Apologies for not having it right in front of me. And also, isn't Montana for Yellowstone just like a 20-minute drive from tip to tail?
Yeah, get there quick.
All right, so this is
get there in no time.
This is from Kevin. Whitefish is my favorite Montana town too. Bulldog is an all-timer.
Yeah,
and he has a picture of a beer in a Bulldog Saloon mug. That glass is awesome. Very ripped, very jacked Bulldog holding a beer. And he asks,
did I miss this?
I wonder if the boys got a peek of the bathroom.
I did not see this tweet at all. So somebody tweeted me. Oh, here it is from Kevin.
That's an awesome glass.
Dude, they have several logos that are so cool at the Bulldog Saloon in Whitefish. No, the boys didn't go to the bathroom there. That's the place that I went into and wanted the warm blanket, but it was like completely taken over by tourists.
Okay.
And so it was so disappointing. But the bar looks exactly the same. They actually have three incredible Bulldog logos that they have. That's one of them. But it's a really cool joint. It's a cool joint.
I'll repost it 971BFS. Yeah. But the merch, I can't imagine, is amazing with that kind of a logo.
The merch is incredible. I was trying to talk NBC. I'm like, dude, this would be incredible. He's like, I don't think I could wear this to high school. Like a saloon shirt. I'm like, I think you could. Can't you wear a saloon shirt to high school?
I don't think so.
Am I wrong on that? They get mad at that?
Probably, yes.
All right. I want to read this one from Chad. I may have missed something last week on this. So do you guys know the back? Did you see this email about last night's captain's game? Do you know the backstory on this?
No. Would it be the Lake County captain's game?
Seems like it. So good morning, Bishop and friends. He sent this yesterday. I'm not sure if the show updates will include the captain's 7-5 win over South Bend last night. The box score will show three home runs, a strong start for Jacob Zibben and Jeffrey Mercedes collecting three hits. But there's another story that it won't show. It doesn't record that a little girl from Austria attended her first baseball game. Doesn't mention that she proudly carried an ice cream served in a plastic batting helmet, danced with the mascot skipper, or that her grandpa celebrating his 87th birthday this week were able to share their first baseball game with his granddaughter while surrounded by family. Years from now, I doubt she'll remember Welbin Francisca's first inning home run on the final score, but she'll remember the lights, the crowd, the music, the smell of the ballpark, and spending a summer evening with grandpa. The box score will always say the captains beat South Bend 7-5 for our family. It'll always be remembered as the night Anita went to her first baseball game. Love the show. Thanks for all that you do. That's beautiful. That's awesome. So I don't have a point of reference on it. But that's what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about. Is those moments. And this is the thing that is still undefeated about baseball. If you get a nice night, it's the best porch to have a beer you're ever going to find. It's undefeated for that. It is.
Give me that $8 ticket at Huntington Park. Head up top to the left field.
Yep.
Bleachers where the Roosters used to be and have a time.
Yep. And it's a beautiful view, and there's stuff going on. It's awesome. I've lost touch of it the way that I used to have it years ago, but I still appreciate that part of it for sure. Big Ten Media Days, day three, coming down the pipe. My guy Cignetti's going to be the anchor man of all of this. We'll get into what to expect today, including just the oddness of Kyle Whittingham at Michigan. That's coming up next, Bishop and Friends, right here on
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Degenerate Gamblers Deep Middle at Scotty Vegas every Sunday morning at 9 for On the Money.
Presented by Krieger Ford, your best bet for a new car or truck. Visit Krieger Ford on Morse Road today or go online at KriegerFord.com.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the rest of the day, we'll see some of those fair weather clouds trying to pop up, but we'll call it mostly sunny for the afternoon. Highs reach the lower 80s. Real nice day out there. Mostly clear skies tonight, 63 for a low. For your Friday, partly sunny skies as some high clouds gradually stream in from the west. We'll see highs right around 86. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 8 decades. Big Ten Media Days roll on today over at the Capone Hilton in Chicago. Pretty loaded up in terms of, wait, you're still here? Wait, you're here? Oh, that's right. You won a national championship. There's a little bit of that today, a little bit of all of that. It starts with Matt Rhule at Nebraska. I don't know what he says. I have no idea what to make of his tenure there. If you would have said a couple of years ago that Dylan Raiola would finish his college career somewhere other than Nebraska, I would have said, well, that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, given all the details and as all in as they were on Raiola. But he is now backing up at Oregon while Nebraska moves in another direction. And Rhule feels to me like whatever momentum he had in the program has gone by the wayside. And it also feels like Nebraska's kind of resigned to just being a 8-12 in the Big Ten type of program, which is a wild thing for them. They are probably the ones I'm most shocked that didn't take full advantage of NIL. I've always assumed that they must have a lot of money to throw around, and they just haven't been able to land the plane in NIL or in recruiting, quite honestly, the way that I assumed that they would. I thought NIL would really help them out. It really hasn't done anything. They're about the same as they've been. Mike Loxley at Maryland goes today. He's that one where you say, oh, yeah, he's still there. Yeah, he's still there. He's still at Maryland. The wait, you're here guy, that's Kyle Whittingham at Michigan. I always liked him. I always liked his Utah program. I'm not going to dislike him just because he's at Michigan, but it's going to be weird. It's a weird spot. It feels like square peg, round hole in about a million different ways, not just him to that program, but also him to the quarterback. They have all this Ward Manuel stuff that's circling around the program. I don't know what the one good thing about it is with Whittingham there, he doesn't have, and maybe this was part of the, if there is a genius in the hire, maybe it was this, he can't really speak to anything that's been going on there because he's not a Michigan man at all. You probably even know Ward Manuel.
Zero connections with Sharon.
None of it.
Probably met Jim Harbaugh at a thing one time.
Right. He's the antithesis of a Michigan man.
I wonder how much he'll get asked about it today, if at all, because he has no ties.
He'll get asked.
I mean, I think the only ask would be, how much did you know before you were hired? Did you know like this was coming with Ward Manuel and whatnot? Yeah. But
I'd really want to know from his vantage point, like, or what have conversations with Ward been like? Like, what has your interaction with Ward Manuel been like with the interim president? Like, what in all of that with Ward, did you meet with the investigators when they had that $11 million investigation? Like, were you around when they were still interviewing people, and were you one of those that they talked with?
I got one for you. Who hired you?
Oh, important.
Were they still empowering Ward to hire people? Who was the president at the time of his hire? Who was did the board hire you? I mean, and we've heard this before when we talked about some of the stuff with Sharon Moore, and when we have John U. Bacon up and some others, and even Angelique, that there is a little bit of a divide in that board at Michigan. And so, you know, who hired you, man? I'll tell you what, I think this is the most bat blank crazy gap between positive and negative a situation could be. Like, he's a really good coach. Let's just use that as a jumping off point. Kyle Whittingham is a hell of a football coach. he is a fish out of water at Michigan. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. Time will tell. But could I see him coaching up a pretty talented roster? A supremely talented quarterback who's very raw. But could I see him coaching all of that up and them winning, you know, 9 games this year? 10? Okay. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I respect him that much as a coach. But could I also see this thing going like 4-8? 5-7? Maybe. I mean, this may up being end up being a spectacular disaster as well. The last time Michigan hired a true non-Michigan man was Rich Rodriguez. Now, Rich did something that Kyle was smart enough not to do. Rich basically said, yeah, we don't need any of you guys. And he pushed out a lot of the talent that was there, including Justin Bourne, among others. But Kyle didn't do that. He retained a lot of their talent. And they have recruited well. They've portaled well. So, you know, I think there's a wide gap in what success could look like or could not look like this season at Michigan. Did you guys see the video of the Northwestern football stadium, by the way?
Looks pretty nice.
Dave Braun. Yeah. Yeah. Dave Braun's talking today. So the last one to do it, a new football stadium in the Power 4-ish was Baylor. Did a brand new stadium relatively recently. Kansas is essentially doing a brand new one now. But it looks like Northwestern landed the plane on this thing. Looks pretty cool. I don't know if Northwestern can be Vanderbilt. They certainly have the money to be Vanderbilt if they want to be, but you need to then throw that money into it. So it's an easy. I mean, have you guys been to their campus?
In Evanston?
Yeah.
No.
It's beautiful. And their athletic facility is stunning. It's right on Lake Michigan. It's gorgeous. There's something to sell there.
They got a chance to peacock a bit as they're going to try to open new Ryan Field October 2nd. It's an 8 o'clock p.m. kick on Fox. They're hosting Penn State.
Okay.
So there's a chance there.
Yeah.
But they seem like one of the schools that would do really, really well if they could get their booster base organized to go after players who are looking for their second or third stops. Like guys who, where they were a 5-star out of high school, chose a school in the Big Ten footprint, didn't work out.
Yeah.
And then said, hey, here's some money. Here's a great place to live. Here's Chicago. And you sell that to them. But I wonder,
it's not different than what Nashville's selling.
Right.
I mean, that's how Clark Lee kind of built Nashville in Vanderbilt with Nashville. Now, climate's a little different, obviously, but it's pretty similar, and now all of a sudden Clark Lee lands the number one quarterback in the country. So when you get the right coach at the right place with the right money, things can happen a little bit. Go ahead, Vic.
I was just saying, I like Reese's thought process there. Like we talked about, what was it, Texas A&M yesterday, and one of their starting defensive ends is slated to be a guy that transferred in from Northwestern. Well, I'm sure there was a defensive end at Texas A&M that had to go somewhere else. So why not try to get those guys? If people are taking yours, just take their guys that might have been higher-rated recruits and get some talented guys in there.
Yeah, that's a program to watch. Washington with Jed Fish, they were able to keep Damon Williams, and so that gives them a little bit of juice heading into this season. Last year, a little difficult for them. I really liked them in the preseason. When I get a look at Denzel Boston, I'm like, God, they should have won more. Damon Williams is a good player, like Boston's a stud. They probably should have won a little bit more than they did last year at UW. They are the furthest outpost, obviously, and I cannot imagine what that travel was like for them. And then Cignetti closes out the day. He is your anchor leg. He is at 12:45 today. He has a roster that is largely new after kind of running it back last year in one of the most amazing seasons in the history of the sport, history of any sport, quite honestly. I don't love the Hoover kid. Didn't love him a lot at TCU, but I've learned my lesson. I doubt nothing with Cignetti. I mean, he's got 2 losses in 2 years. You'd be an idiot to doubt him at this point. And I do think that he will get that kid right. And they just had a massive recruiting win. As long as he's there, I just think we're at the point now where we have to get used to the fact that Indiana's not going anywhere, that Indiana's going to be a playoff team.
It's pretty simple. I win.
Great.
Google me.
You don't have to Google him anymore.
God.
I mean, it's just known.
How do we live in a reality of this? How is it? You love it, Bick.
The wild things in college football, this might be the wildest.
I can't
it's
wait
the wildest thing in the history of sports.
I can't wait till September when the bobbleheads come in.
Did you get the deposit in? Early deposit on the Signetti?
Oh, yeah.
Audio bobbleheads?
One for me, one for Bo.
There you go.
Can't wait.
You got candy striper shorts on?
You think he would ever do that? Like, Signetti would ever do the candy stripes?
Yes.
He should.
Yeah, right?
Of course he will.
In fact, why not come out today with him?
He is a rocket ship to the second most popular person associated with Indiana behind Bob Knight. And he's less polarizing by about 1,000,000,000%. Can you imagine his popularity in that state? Signetti? Come on. It's unbelievable.
He's their Jim Tressel.
Governor numbers.
He is. Yeah, he's their Jim Tressel. He's their Jim Tressel, Urban Meyer, Woody Hayes, all wrapped into one. He's all of that. He's Bob Knight. I mean, he's that type of... It's amazing what he does. I'll never doubt it again. And I think they will be a playoff team this year. I'd be shocked if they weren't. Mr. Finebaum was at SEC Media Days last week. It was quite noteworthy. He's had an eye on what's happened at Big Ten Media Days this week. We'll get his thoughts on all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Bishop and Friends present college football's most polarizing figure.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Come on back to our show, Tim. The audience hates you.
This is ESPN's Paul Finebaum, sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
All right, buddy, we didn't get a chance to talk to you last week. How'd Tampa treat you?
You've been there before. 4 days in a submarine and nothing but SEC rhetoric.
Any burned steakhouse? Did you get a good meal there?
The only time I got out was the very first night. The SEC Nation crew met, and it was completely ruined as I walked in the restaurant. I was accosted by Ric Flair.
Come again?
Yeah.
The
Ric Flair. He was, we've had a bit of a beef. You may remember.
I do remember.
With Jim Harbaugh. And, he was literally sitting in a bar with somebody and, Tebow was talking to him and he immediately hugged me, mugged for the cameras. But this was the best part. 30 or 40 minutes later, we had a private room. He brought back a portrait of himself, of which he signed to me, which begs the question, when you're Ric Flair and you go out to eat at a place in Tampa where he now lives, I'm told, do you carry three or four of those in the trunk or what? I don't know.
It's the first thing I thought of. Does he have a backpack with portraits?
Yeah, and by the way, I'm not talking about like a little print that you hand out at a county fair. I'm talking about the kind you put up in your pool room at home.
Like bigger than an 8x10?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it was a wall painting.
Oh my God.
And I had to lug that thing back to the hotel. Not that anybody was going to steal that from me, by the way. But here's the punchline. It all started because, Kirby Smart was on the sidelines a couple of years ago with Herschel Walker and Ric Flair. I don't know why this happened, but he hugged Herschel, blew off Ric Flair, of which Rick immediately went ballistic. Next thing you know, he's in Ann Arbor. Hugging Harbaugh, tweeting about Kirby, and then I got into the fray because I sent Flair a text one day as a friend. Hey, Rick, I don't think it's a good idea to blast Kirby Smart. You got a lot of fans in the South.
Yeah.
So as he was leaving the table, he said, are you going to see Kirby tomorrow? I said, yes, I am, Rick. He said, I got a message for him. I said, sure. He said, tell him to kiss my ass.
I got to tell you, man, that's exactly how you'd want Ric Flair to behave, though, I think. I mean, if I'm in your spot, I want him having a portrait. I want him still worried about a beef from a couple. That's spectacular. Look, this was kind of a WWE attitude down at SEC Media Days. A lot of talk about separating, and Kirby did it, and then Sankey did it, and Is it saber rattling, nothing more, or do you think there's something to it?
I don't think there's anything to it. And I interviewed Sankey a couple of days later, and, you know, listen, you've interviewed these guys before. I mean, he walked it back to a point. There's always that door open, but nobody wants self-governance right now. You know, you see these idiotic things that happen, like the NCAA suspending the Tennessee player for a $450 airline ticket for two games. Nobody wants that. So the SEC is not going to march off and actually hire somebody to manage themselves, considering it came out last week. Do you have a $20.5 million roster, as the House settlement said, or do you have a 30 or 40, as rumored? Lane Kiffin's team essentially said we have a $50 million roster. So who is going to manage that? I'll spare you the Senate TikTok right now going on with the Save the World Act. But ultimately, it's not happening. And the biggest thing that got to me was the bravado down there. Coaches still, they're all bashing the 9-game SEC schedule, even though they wanted it. They feel like the Big Ten hoodwinked them. And then finally, on the final day, here comes Nick Saban. Yes, he's still around, telling Mike Greenberg that the SEC is still the best conference in college football.
Yeah. Meantime, you have Tony Petitti standing there on Tuesday with the three national championships sitting next to him. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing how all of it's kind of the old Costanza line, right? It's not a lie if you believe it. There's a little bit of that goes with all of this. I was curious from it, and I'm with you on the Senate thing. We don't need to waste any time on that. But was there one of the things I think Sankey's been really good at through the years is developing consensus amongst his constituents? Were there some issues that you felt there was an SEC consensus on that they could kind of get behind and still maybe have the power to ramrod home, whether it was size of the playoff, et cetera?
No, absolutely wow. Not. And I mean, his own coaches are against him on the 9-game schedule. Not that that matters anymore because it's about to happen. But even a lot of people are now defending the SEC based on the 9-game schedule, even though it's not, it doesn't happen until this year. So there's a lot of chaos there. One thing in media days, you only get the coaches and players. You don't get the administrator. That's where Sankey, that's his room. The coaches have never really, I mean, they all praise him. That's just like standard operating procedure. It's like Washington and you know, depending on whatever political movement you subscribe to, but it's so chaotic, and the playoffs. I mean, I think more coaches are now in favor of the 24, and you know, I mean, Kirby Smart reminds me, you know, I've been in favor of that all along. No, you haven't. But the problem is, Bo, when you get coaches up there for endless number period of time, they're going to say anything. Obviously, it came down to Kiffin. He went 20 minutes, as you know. He was determined not to make any news. And I'll give the guy credit. I mean, since that Vanity Fair article, he has not said a word. And I don't think he's going to until September.
Yeah, I was curious. And then you had the lawsuit with Ole Miss and suing the, you know, former Ole Miss players at LSU, which happened this week. It's never a dull day down there. In terms of, you mentioned you're talking to coaches. Let's do on-the-field stuff. Was there a coach that you talked to down there, and as you talk to folks around the league, that maybe has a little bit of a cat ate the canary feeling, that maybe they're better than people think they are? Was there any sense you had of any of the programs down there that maybe they believe they're a little better than maybe the rest of us think they are?
I think Oklahoma, but nobody else, but nobody believed it though. That was the problem. I walked in there on Monday and the buzz about Oklahoma was rampant. By Thursday, they were voted seventh in the SEC. Mm-hmm. So Mike Elko, not a well known, I mean, he could walk down the main street in Columbus. Nobody would know who he was. Yeah. He was really confident privately about his team. He's got the quarterback back. He's got a number of other key components back. But what you heard continually, no matter how good their teams are, they say, yeah, but we got to play this SEC schedule. We litigated that last year with Alabama. The only guy that didn't really defend his schedule was Kalen DeBoer, because I'm still a week and a day later trying to figure out what in the world he talked about up on the podium.
Boy, no kidding. I mean, he's in such a strange spot in what I assume is a massive year for them. And then at the top of this, you mentioned Kiffin, obviously, and he was able to navigate 20 minutes without making any headlines. Meantime, now Pete Golding is at Ole Miss, and we're doing 20 most interesting programs today, and we got Ole Miss on the docket. We'll do them in the final hour of the program. What do you make now that you've got 6 months of separation on all of that? Kiffin inevitably at LSU and everything that comes with that, the $50 million roster, all that, juxtaposed to Ole Miss, which, you know, may have one of their best teams ever, a playoff team that won games and returning quarterback and probably going to start in the top 10 in the country. Pete Golding up to this?
I don't know. He met the room the other day. I mean, Pete Golding's like, you know, let's say Ryan Day decides to meet, you and, you know, four or five other influence makers in the back room of a steakhouse for some bourbon and meat. And he's okay, off the record. That was Pete Golding in front of the cameras last week. I mean, I just don't think he knows any different. You got to love this guy, but I have to question whether he really is up for it. There's just no evidence. Last year was an aberration. He gets the job. I mean, he gets credit. You know, he did something Kiffin never done. He won two playoff games. First of all, he beat Tulane in the playoff. There are 40 high school coaches in Columbus Metro who could have been on the Ole Miss sidelines and beaten Tulane that day. Okay, it took no skill whatsoever with Trinidad Chambliss. You know, the game against Georgia, I'll give him that. That's a huge win. But yeah, the new narrative on Ole Miss is they came within one play of playing for the national championship. Oh, okay, great. that's not going to win games. They open it against Louisville neutral site. I mean, that's a losable game if things go wrong. Shouldn't be. And then, of course, LSU and I believe, I mean, they got a really tricky schedule.
They do.
As LSU does. So I don't know. Everywhere you turned up there, you looked at the schedule. Some had it much easier than others. Oklahoma's schedule is just absolutely obnoxious, having to go to Ann Arbor the second week of the season. The Texas game, what was interesting, too, is a year ago, we talked about one game for 4 days. This year, the Ohio State-Texas game rarely got mentioned at media days.
Hmm. Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, week two, that's going to be an interesting one. I'm sure you'll be there along with so many others of the game day crew and all of it. We'll be here before we know it. Appreciate your perspective, and the Ric Flair story is top notch, man. I mean, that's everything you'd want it to be.
See you, Bob, next week.
See you, man. I mean, wouldn't you want Ric Flair packing around not 8x10s or 5x7s, but painted portraits for himself to sign? Like, is it in a van? I mean, that's everything that you would want. Get you a thing or not a thing coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
A resident gambling degenerate, Steve Biddle and Scotty Vegas for On the Money. Sunday mornings at 9.
Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. The show that understands the importance of a situational beverage. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Thursday. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
Thomas Dunn covers California Athletics, the one in Berkeley, for On okay. 3. He said this on Wednesday. Cal Athletics claims $88.5 million in gifts and pledges, its highest amount of support in an academic year on record. This includes 18 donors who pledged over $1 million each, the most on record per Cal. Thing or not a thing?
Well, that's a massive thing for them. So my hunch is this has to do with Tosh Lupoi, who was hired from Oregon, big energetic guy. He's the new head football coach at Cal. And then isn't Ron Rivera there fundraising?
He's their general manager.
Yeah, so he's fundraising with Tosh Lupoi, so they're excited about things. Look, I know that the University of California athletic, you know, the university system, those athletic departments are in big trouble in terms of being, you know, in the red. But their financial might is extraordinary if it can be mobilized. I really thought, and nothing that's happened since makes me want to change it. I really thought that the Big Ten should have just taken all of the Pac-12. That was remaining. I really thought they should have taken Cal and Stanford. Academically, they certainly are aligned. Those are elite, maybe the two elite private and public institutions in the country. So they're elite on that side of things. I would have taken Oregon State and Washington State and just have a Western ring of the Big Ten is what I would have done. And you're just big and you go east and west and away you go. And I do think you could have sold it. They haven't sold the fourth window yet. That's a diversion, obviously. But this is a big deal for Cal and good for them. Because there, if you get mobilized money, you can be dangerous quickly.
I think it's a little thing because this is obviously you need money now to play the game in college sports at a high level. Now, this could become a really big thing if we see some results on the field from this year, whether that be Cal in football or basketball. If we see some results on the field, then this is a major thing. And I think it's probably pretty sustainable for them, Bo. As you mentioned, they've got some money in their alumni base for that school. So this could be, maybe we look back and it's a sliding door moment, as we like to talk about on the 20 Most Interesting.
Yeah.
The Athletic's Andrew Marchand is reporting today that LeBron James and ESPN are closing in on an agreement for a behind-the-scenes documentary series similar to Michael Jordan's The Last Dance. One of the sources to The Athletic described the talks as being at the one-yard line. The expectation is that LeBron will have a camera crew documenting his time with the Sixers. It's expected to be his final stop in his NBA career. The documentary is expected to also use footage from earlier in James's career as NBA crews have filmed him since he was a rookie. The financial terms and other potential components are not yet known. Netflix is expected to be the landing spot for it. Thing or not a thing?
Not to me. Not interested. Don't care. I think the big difference between this and The Last Dance is The Last Dance was before social media, so you didn't get to see everything behind the scenes with Michael Jordan for his entire career. I've seen everything with LeBron James for the last 25 years. What don't we know? And honestly, the other thing that I think that they misjudged in all of this is, like, what fan base roots for him? I mean, I'll wait. You tell me. Who roots for him? LeBron fans? I mean, that's it. The Sixers for now.
That would have been the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, I mean, if you've gone to Cleveland, then you have a story to tell. This isn't a story to tell. This is a 42-year-old legend ring chasing one more time.
I think the thing, though, that you hit on the head there, Bo, is LeBron fans. And I think there's a lot of LeBron fans. There's a lot of people out there that they may not have a team, but they root for LeBron in whatever team he's on. And this is something that I guess it's not a thing because it's not a surprise. And also, they've been filming LeBron for a long time for this reason. LeBron's people has had people filming him and things behind the scenes and all of that for a long time because they knew this was going to be happening at some point. The Last Dance was great, and you mentioned it was before social media, but it also dropped at the perfect time when COVID happened. I'm not saying that this LeBron thing won't be big, but it's not going to be nearly as big as that.
No, not close.
Yeah, as a Cavs fan, miss me on this. On Tuesday, ESPN's Dan Orlovsky put his foot down on Get Up when it comes to men getting this popular procedure.
You never get a pedicure?
I have never gotten a pedicure.
Oh, it's a delight.
I never will.
Yeah, no,
I am completely against pedicures for dudes.
What for?
You're a dude. You're not supposed to get pedicures.
Yes, you are. Nah, nothing wrong with being pampered.
Oh, it's a delight. No. I am so against this. This is a thing for me.
You're coming with me.
Dudes should not be getting pedicures.
Who am I told is laughing at this? Monica Mc... Oh, Jay Will? Jay Will, can we put them up there?
Feel good?
Jay Will?
Just nasty feet, Dan. Just nasty feet.
My feet are awful. I totally agree. But I'd rather have awful feet than get pedicures.
Oh, come on. They scrape the terrible skin.
You're also not the person who should be having
it. I love a pedicure. Are you kidding?
It feels fantastic.
I totally agree.
I've got my friends taking their teenage sons to get them.
Yeah? I think it's an excellent idea.
Thing or not a thing.
Have you guys had a pedicure?
I have once.
I have not.
I mean, they're pretty great. I've had a handful. And first one I had was right before our wedding was the first one I ever had. And I've had a couple since, like on vacation or whatever. It's not something I do all the time. But what's odd is Dan's tone on this is pretty weird. Like, men shouldn't get pedicures. Why? Like, do you like a massage? It's just a massage for your feet. Like, that's all it is. They just, you know. Cleanse your feet.
It's a weird thing to stick to. Yeah.
Yeah. Just an odd, I think it's a weird hill to die on. Like, I'm really against this. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's a hell of a lot of passion for something that's not that big of a deal.
So I have never got one, and I don't think it's for me. Although a foot and calf massage, I think a lot of times sounds pretty darn good, and they do that a lot in a pedicure. Also, did he take a shot at Greeny? Did he say, kind of call Greeny not a guy, saying that you're not the person that should be talking about this?
Greeny's been peddling in those waters since the Mike and the Mike and Mike days. Like, he's been peddling in those waters. I thought it was hilarious where, in the clip, I could hear, 16 people talking, and it's, in a total example of, get up. Greeny wanted to hear from somebody else. As if the 16 people sitting on the desk weighing in on this aren't enough. Now he's like, wait, I'm hearing in my ear that Monica McNutt, or is it Jay Will? Did they have a problem with this? Put them on the screen. You got four guys on the desk. How many people need to weigh in on pedicures, man?
I have never had one, and it's not for me, like I said, but...
Well, you don't know, because you haven't had it.
I guess that's true.
Would you be open to it?
I would not, if somebody was like, hey, let's go do this as a bit or something, I would for sure do it. I have a friend that gets them religiously. He loves them.
Yeah.
He enjoys them.
Yeah, they're quite relaxing.
They are. You would enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, no one's going to... Manicure pretty good, too. I mean, they both win. I don't do them very often.
Nothing wrong with being pampered.
No, it's good. It's all good. 20 most interesting turns our attention to the deep, deep South. The Ole Miss Rebels. They are pretty loaded up. The schedule's robust. New coach, same quarterback, stud running back. Can they go one step closer to that national title, or is this year where it all crumbles? We get to them coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Big Ten Media Days wrap up today in Chicago. First time for new Michigan man Kyle Whittingham. He'll meet with the media around 1 o'clock. Nebraska's Matt Rhule and Indiana's Kurt Cignetti will bookend the podium sessions today. We're one month away from actual games. 37 days from the Buckeyes hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Ohio State's going to begin training camp next week, and the fans going to be live from the Woody Hayes Athletic Center next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. In the NFL, Hall of Fame games next Thursday between the Cardinals and Panthers. Browns and Bengals continue camp practices Thursday. Cincinnati lost defensive end Shamar Stewart yesterday. He was carted off the field with a left knee injury. Cleveland hosted free agent defensive end Jadeveon Clowney Wednesday. Clowney had 8.5 sacks with the Cowboys last season. This update sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com to make your reservation today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
The best hair on the air.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
20 most interesting programs heads back to the Deep South and the Ole Miss Rebels. Hit it, fellas.
We'll expand conferences. We'll expand the playoffs. But we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
The Ole Miss Rebels are in the crosshairs today. Pete Golding will be in year one. He won a couple of playoff games as the interim coach and eventually named the head coach at Ole Miss. He returns stupefiably, if that's a word. Trinidad Chambliss was ineligible, and now eligible. Chambliss is back. A judge in Mississippi made that so, and so away we go. He was one of the surprise and really cool stories of all of last season. He returns. Kewon Lacy returns as well, maybe the best returning running back in college football from a production standpoint returns. They were big in the portal. They had the number two portal class in the country, only to LSU's number one. Their recruiting class ended up last year ranked 22nd. They're currently, I think, 13th in 2027. So there's a little bit of program momentum. They did lose some guys, including a couple starters that they are now suing who are over at LSU. The schedule is absolutely robust. They open against Louisville, neutral site game. That's our guy Lincoln Kienholz leading the cards. They got Charlotte after that, and then quite honestly, like if you could go to any game for environment other than a game involving the Ohio State Buckeyes, I would imagine this is everybody's list. It is LSU in Oxford on September 19th. That will be a bonkers environment that Saturday night in Oxford. Specifically, it'll be anyway, but if those two teams both end up, you know, ranked fifth and eighth or ninth in the country by the time it happens, it'll be absolutely nuts. Then they're at Florida, at Vanderbilt, Missouri, then at Texas, Auburn, Georgia at home, at Oklahoma, Wofford, and Mississippi State. That is the schedule for the Rebels of Ole Miss. I wanted Lane Kiffin to stay. I wanted him to stay. I wanted him to continue to... I thought it was almost the perfect fit. It's a quirky place. There's a little bit of an elevated feel to it from 50,000 feet of southern haberdashery and kind of all of the pomp and circumstance that comes with the Grove. It just felt like a good fit for him. I understand why he left. I understand you can win national championships at LSU. I don't know if you can do that at Ole Miss. I understand from a lifestyle standpoint, you're going from a relatively small town in Oxford to a big city in Baton Rouge. And just lifestyle, places to eat, places to live, those type of things are going to be better in Baton Rouge in a big, big way. But I wanted him to stay there. And they will forever be, whatever happens with this Protect College Sports Act, they're kind of the college football equivalent of the Stepien rule. So the Stepien rule is you can't trade multiple first-round picks in the NBA because Ted Stepien, who was a crook and owner of the Cavaliers, traded a bunch of them, and it really kneecapped the franchise. And so they put in a rule called the Stepien rule that you can't trade, I think, more than two future first-round picks in the NBA. In this Protect College Sports Act, there's the Kiffin rule, which is you can't leave a job that you are in to pursue another job. Now, I don't think any of this will hold up in a court of law, but they're trying to do this to stop Kiffin. I said this at the time, and I'll say it again now. I don't know what else he was supposed to do. It really wasn't his fault. It was really the fault of the calendar that we live in and how backwards all of that is. If you want to take what you perceive to be a better job, you should be able to take it, and he did. Now, you could say that he probably should have just pulled the Band-Aid and said, I'm out, and that would have looked pretty callous too. So it was awkward. It was a mess. Somehow, Ole Miss ended up going 2-1 in postseason play. They lose to Miami 31-27 in a national semifinal, but they got a win over Georgia. And as Mr. Feinbaum pointed out, they had a win over Tulane. And now it's just a matter of, can Pete Golding handle all of this? Like, real expectations at Ole Miss. That's a lot on a guy who's never been a head coach before.
Was Miami part of the two wildest games in the college football playoff? I guess three, if you want to include the national championship, where they had that awful, that stinker Miami did against Texas A&M in the first round, and then that semifinal game against Ole Miss was cinema. That was an incredible game between the Canes and the Rebels.
Yeah, and they had our game in there too. So, yeah. But yeah, they were in the thick of it. Yeah,
Lane should have just left and not tried to do because the way he left is you're burning the bridge. But then he added more to it, like he napalmed it, and then he burned the whatever was left, and taking players from Ole Miss. Now that they're suing for those players, like it's bad enough you're leaving, but then to go the way he left will always leave a stain on his you know, whatever his legacy still is in Oxford. But it absolutely should be a lesson of how you should handle departures. Just go. Just go, man. Like,
I guess get, that's
take
it.
The better job. And it stinks for Ole Miss, and not you should necessarily be shedding tears, but they're always going to be just a jumping off point for coaches. Like, Ole Miss is never going to be a destination school.
No.
For a coach to spend a decade plus there. But Lane could have made, I think, a really good... Lane could have carved out a really good space for himself in college football if he just stayed. Because with LSU, and it's going to flame out spectacularly, but it's going to be a flame out.
Could be. It could be there. Yeah, I think Ole Miss, I mean, they put together several 10-win seasons now. I think three of the last four are 10-win seasons. They played in a national semifinal. Like, no, it's always going to have some things that keep it from being a true destination job, including the brand, quite honestly. I think some of what Kiffin said, there's some truth to in the Vanity Fair article. Joshua Perry and I talked about that a couple of months ago when he and I were doing a show. Like, there is still some of that in terms of the brand that's out there from a negative standpoint. But here's the thing that was an eye-opener for me. They obviously have money. And money that they can put into action. When you're talking about the number two portal class, you're talking about what they've... I mean, they portaled Jackson Dart. You know, like, they've done this now a little bit. And they didn't have the mass exodus. They had a couple of guys leave for LSU, but it wasn't total. If you look at their schedule last year, guys, they lost at Georgia by 8. And they lost to Miami by 4. That's it. They beat LSU. They beat Oklahoma. They beat Georgia in the playoff. Like, pretty robust season last year. The best season in the history of Ole Miss football, obviously.
I think there's expectations at Ole Miss this year because they returned Trinidad Chambliss and because they returned Kawan Lacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big get in the portal, the number two ranked portal class, as you mentioned. But I wonder, like, year in, year out, are there expectations there? And we talked about this with LSU. Like, that's one of the reasons I think Kiffin maybe should have stayed at Ole Miss, is because I don't know if the expectation there is ever going to be win the national title. Now, maybe if they have a couple more seasons like last year, that will be the case. But I think it's going to be hard for them to string a bunch of seasons like last year together. Like, I think... if it wasn't for Chambliss and Lacy, this would not be a great team this coming year. And I don't know if they're going to make the college football playoff again this year or not in the SEC, but they at least have hope because of those two. I just wonder if Ole Miss thinks they're a big program. We talk about the SEC teams all the time. Auburn thinks they deserve to have what Alabama's had. I don't know if Ole Miss is there.
No, I don't think they expect that. I always said Ole Miss was Indiana. Except... they just care about football. Indiana cared about basketball. Ole Miss cares about football. But, like, the two, academically, obviously, Indiana's far superior. But just from the perspective of, like, kind of cute little, cute little college towns. Certainly the bellwether, like, the blue bloods in the state go to those two institutions. And then, you know, kind of the superiority thing that they have, but obviously some limitations to standard. I think Kiffin had last year at Ole Miss, I think he had his Cignetti season. You know, Cignetti just did it to the apex. But, like, no, you're right. I don't think anybody at Ole Miss is like, hey, we got to go win the national championship. They're happy winning the Egg Bowl. Beat Mississippi State, you know, 3 out of 10 times beat LSU, 3 out of 10 times beat Alabama. They're happy. But I think what's kind of cool about it is, like, financially, they're ready to go. Like, you got the number two portal. And by the way, they were portaling with Kiffin, too. So that tells you that they got a little bit of money down there to throw around. Yeah. And so, you know, something to watch for there.
I'm trying to think their Big Ten equivalent.
I think it's Indiana. I just said it. I think it's Indiana. That's the most similar.
I guess I mean all time.
I still think it's Indiana.
Still? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, Indiana's, I don't even know what it would be. I guess it would be like if you put, like, Indiana and kind of Purdue together, because Purdue had some quirky success at one point. I mean, here is, you know, they've had a great deal of success. You go back, let's just go since 2000. You know, losing records, there's a handful of them with Ed Orgeron in the 2000s. But they always won with Houston Nutt. He had 1-2-10 season. Matt Luke struggled a little bit, 5-5, 4-8, you know, that. But then they hire Kiffin. Kiffin in year two goes, he goes 10-3, 8-5, 11-2, 10-3, 11-2, 11-1 in his last year. So they were ranked in the top 10 a lot during that stretch. So, I mean, they were ranked third in the AP in 2014. Honestly, they might be Penn State. So they might, and in the last 20 years, they might be a little bit like Penn State. I mean, they had three times in the last 10 years they've been ranked in the top three in the country at one point or another. So that's kind of a Penn State feeling thing a little bit without the history of Penn State, obviously. We'll hit the categories on the Rebels coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Fan, we love summer as much as the next guy.
Fun times at the pool, family vacations, all that crap.
But as the dog days descend upon us, it only means one thing.
Buckeye Football Fall Camp.
Join us beginning August 6th. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the rest of the day, we'll see some of those fair weather clouds trying to pop up, but we'll call it mostly sunny for the afternoon. Highs reach the lower 80s. Real nice day out there. Mostly clear skies tonight, 63 for a low. For your Friday, partly sunny skies as some high clouds gradually stream in from the west. We'll see highs right around 86. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. After putting up with Dom Tabari for a decade, the broadcast gods gave Bo these two. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, category time on the Ole Miss Rebels. Hit it. It's funny how so many of these have that preamble, and then we get into it a little bit. I haven't heard that one much. I'd be honest with you. I haven't played a lot of college football. Usually my gauge on if I know the fight song is how much NCAA college football in my life have I played with that team. I haven't done much Ole Miss. I think I maybe did an Eli Manning season 20 years ago. That's the last time I remember playing with Ole Miss. So it's been a long time. College football adaptable grade for the Rebels, Reese.
I'm going to give them a B-plus on this. They did a great job. They've done a good job always recruiting one or two five-star guys every now and then over the last 20 years. I think even breaking NCAA rules along the way, but everybody's mm-hmm. doing it now, so it's not that big of a deal. Keeping Trinidad Chambliss was huge for me in this grade in that he was a Heisman darling most of last season coming out of nowhere. And the fact that he probably could have gone anywhere in the country that was looking for a quarterback. I wonder what Texas Tech would have paid him. But he's sticking with Pete Golding and Ole Miss. Mm-hmm. I'm not yet there on an A. I don't think it'll ever be an A because you get Elaine Kiffin. He brings them to prominence nationally. Then he leaves
Yeah, I'm going to go a B-plus on this as well. You mentioned Lane. You would have thought a lot more would have followed him to LSU. But he only took four with him to LSU. They got Trinidad Chambliss another year and got him to stay. They got Kawan Lacy to stay. They have the number two portal class in the country. So I think they're doing everything they can. So I'll give them a B+.
I'm going to give them an A because I think they actually max out what they can be. They have some issues that are there, certainly with their brand. They have some issues with their location. And yet, in my lifetime, guys, they had the number one recruiting class in the country. Houston Nutt did that. In the mid-2010s, it was Hugh Freeze. He had the number one recruiting class in the country at Ole Miss. Like, can you imagine that? I keep comparing him to Indiana. Like, that's the type of stuff Cignetti's trying to do now. But, like, they did it there. Number two transfer portal class. They've been really good in the portal the last few years. I think in a way that you know, kind of this era of college football seems to suit them. It seems like they've got some money to spend and some donors that are ready to go. So I think there's a ceiling on it, so it's not an A+, but I think they're adapting incredibly well to the current environment of the sport. Uniform brand grade for the Rebels, Reese.
I think the uniform's an A. The brand, more of a C+, B-, because I think nationally, they get forgotten about a lot. And I don't know if kids, you know, in schools in California ever consider Ole Miss when applying to schools. I think if they're going to the South, you're thinking Georgia or Alabama. And similarly, north of the Mason-Dixon. So they'll average about a B. D minus.
So I think the uniform's an A plus. Yeah, I love every combination and color scheme they roll out there with the uniform. I think the brand grade's probably like a D. And it's why Kiffin is going on to LSU. So put those together. I guess we'll make this a B minus.
So I think we all kind of see this the same. That the uniforms are pretty. I mean, the sky blues are stunning. The red one with the sky blue helmet is amazing. Even the navy one, I'm with you. I think the uniforms are an A+. I love their uniforms. But the brand doesn't offend me personally, but I'm not a black man in the South. So, there's that part of it, too. And that's something when we talked to Joshua about it, he's like, I would never play there. And there's going to be that with some guys who are, and even though there's nothing there now like that, there's going to be certain players who are just like, yeah, not for me. I'm not going to Oxford. I'm not doing it. So I get that. So I think it's probably a B, which goes back to like the adaptability grade for me as an A. I think they're making the very best of their circumstances. But the uniforms are pristine. They are spectacular. Historical player you'd pick to play on this Ole Miss team, Reese?
The 11th overall pick in the 2007 draft, linebacker Patrick Willis won every award you possibly can in football.
I was wondering if you'd get there. That was the one I was going with, too. He would fit quite nicely at linebacker.
He's so good.
So yeah. I almost went Patrick Willis here because they are having to replace almost all of their linebackers, and all of these guys coming in are transfer portal. They have one returning wide receiver, though, and two receivers out of the transfer portal that are going to start from Syracuse. Now, no offense to these wide receivers. They are probably very decent players. They're not A.J. Brown, though. Mm-mm. And Trinidad Chambliss throwing the ball up to A.J. Brown, I think that'd look pretty nice for this Ole Miss team.
All right, you guys took my one and two, so I'm just going to go, and they have Kewon Lacy, so it'd be ridiculous to add Deuce McAllister to it, but to not be repetitive, I'm going to add Deuce McAllister to it. So give me Deuce McAllister, Kewon Lacy in the backfield. Obviously, A.J. would be great, and then Patrick Willis would be ridiculous.
Interesting, none of us took a Manning.
No, because they're good at quarterback. You know, they're not Manning good at quarterback, but they're pretty good at quarterback. So it's like you kind of don't need that part of it. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard at Ole Miss, Reese?
No. I don't think he'd have much interest in Ole Miss.
Yeah, I think this is a D grade on this one. I don't think he's coming to Ole Miss.
Especially without Kiffin. I could see a scenario where Kiffin would, put some pixie dust on it and, have a couple of conversations. But I think it would be a very difficult call with Kiffin. They don't have Kiffin. Not only didn't have Kiffin, they didn't keep Charlie Weiss. He went with Kiffin to LSU. So that whole brain trust, I think it's John David Baker's the offensive coordinator now. He was there from 21 to 23, then he went to ECU. Now he's back. But no, I don't think there's any chance Vince Howard from West Texas is taking an official visit to Ole Miss. Coach grade for Pete Golding. Reese?
Give him a B. B minus, I think, fair. Three games, under his belt, and they lost in the college football playoff semifinal to the runner-up. Pretty good so far, but he's got to follow that up if he wants to make it over, I guess, the B minus.
So I have C written down here, but I think the correct answer is incomplete. We just don't know, and I have a feeling this isn't going to work out with Pete Golding at Ole Miss, so I'm going incomplete.
That's probably the right way to do it. I'm trying to think of the last. Who was the last interim? Well, Freeman. Marcus.
Yeah.
Marcus Freeman. The last interim who, was kind of forced his hire in real time, landed the job, had never been a head coach before, hit the ground running. Obviously, that first season with Marcus at Notre Dame was a little iffy. I mean, he had a couple of bad losses in that first season, but then he got his sea legs under him. The difference, though, is Pete Golding does not have Marcus Freeman's charisma, not by a damn stretch. So he's an acquired taste a little bit. Now, he was under Saban. He was under Kiffin. So he learned from some guys who are really, really good at this. But Yeah, I think I'm kind of leaning more with you, Bake. I think this is kind of a 1 year make your hay, and then who knows what the future looks like at Ole Miss. I think that's takes a very specific guy to win there and coach there and sell that brand. We'll have to see if Golding's up to that. Wes Stephen Willis will join us in about 5 minutes, if indeed he thinks he is. Sliding doors moment for Ole Miss. Reese, what do you got?
So this will be in the 2014 college football season, after the very first playoff rankings ever. The Rebels found themselves 7-1 and in fourth place. Then this was after losing 10-7 to LSU. They then lost to Auburn and ended up finishing the season with three more losses and out of college football playoff consideration. But it was Mississippi State the first. They were number one in the very first set of playoff rankings. So if that would have gone differently, like the Rebels got blown out in two more contests to end the season, how are we discussing this program if they were in the college football playoff?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's Dak Prescott at Mississippi State.
Yep.
I mean, that was the biggest Egg Bowl ever, was that one.
I'm going in the way, way back machine here, Bo, way before all of us. I don't think Mississippi was a very good football program at the beginning of their time, but then in 1947, they hired Johnny Vaught, and he was the head coach there for the next 23 years. The three national championships that Ole Miss claims were in those years during Johnny Vaught, and ever since then, they've pretty much been a 500 program or better, so he kind of put Ole Miss on the map.
I'm going to go sliding doors, a very specific moment, and it is the moment that Cooper Manning hurts his neck at Ole Miss. If Arch's dad doesn't get hurt and doesn't have to stop playing football, there's a pretty damn good chance that his little brother goes to Ole Miss. That's Peyton Manning. Eli Manning did go to Ole Miss. Like, you know Peyton was going to play with his brother at Ole Miss. You know he was going to. So if Peyton Manning goes to Ole Miss and they followed up with Eli Manning to Ole Miss, pretty damn good shot that Arch Manning goes to Ole Miss as well. Like, they could have had Manning legacy. That injury to Cooper's neck, that changed the trajectory of their program. And there's no question Peyton Manning goes to Ole Miss if his brother's playing receiver. There's no doubt in my mind.
Bo, in 10 years from now when we're doing this show, could we say the Pete Golding hire could be the sliding door moment?
Maybe. Could have been. Win it all, make a playoff too soon, or flame out. What do you got for the Rebels, Reese?
I flame out.
Yeah, I think this is a flame out, too. I think their expectations are the college football playoff, but I think they come up just short.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that this feels like that's what's going to happen down in Oxford. Stephen Willis, much closer to it than we are. He will join us in 2 minutes for some perspective on the Rebels. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
If you love a good pie analogy,
think of the cap as a pie. And once you take out one piece, there's less left for the next guy.
Then this is the radio show for you. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
20 most interesting in Oxford, Mississippi, the Ole Miss Rebels, college football semifinalists a year ago. Some stay, some change. Stephen Willis covers Ole Miss. He does it at Locked On Ole Miss, and he joins us on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Before we get to the season and everything that has happened, take me back to the chaos surrounding the end of last season. Now that you've had some space from it, how should Lane Kiffin, how should Ole Miss have handled that circumstance? How could they have done it better?
I don't know that Ole Miss could have done it better. The whole issue came from the fact that Lane wanted to go to LSU and wanted to coach Ole Miss, which means that Ole Miss making the playoff for the first time in their history and the best season in 60 years, all of the benefit of that would have been shined on LSU because it would have been a commercial every time there's a game to do it. So Ole Miss did not let him coach the game. Now, in the hindsight, Lane should have just said, okay, I want to go to LSU. They give me the best chance to win a national championship other than the chance that is right in front of me. And
we'll see exactly what happens, but that's not the way it went down. It turned into a grudge match battle with Wills, of Lane just trying to do everything he can to coach these games, and just wasn't going to happen. At the end, it worked out for everybody. Ole Miss was 18 seconds away from the national championship game, and Lane's doing his thing down in Baton Rouge. Everybody should be happy, but in that moment, Lane shouldn't have had the expectation that he was going to be allowed to continue while coaching a rival team and a team that plays Ole Miss for a trophy every year.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. He was trying to have his cake and eat it too, obviously, is what he was going for there. Do you think there was anything genuine in his, like, in covering him? Because I'm with you. Like, I read it the way you read it. Like, watch me, and now all of this shine will go to LSU. Like, I totally get where you're coming from there. Do you think there was anything genuine in him not wanting to leave that team? Or do you think in your time covering him that he was almost entirely a self-serving entity?
I think he's entirely a self-serving entity. He wanted to be the coach in the playoff. It's not that he didn't want to leave his guys. And if you want proof of that, look at how many of his guys followed him to LSU. I think there was four players that ended up going down there. Now, look what Matt Campbell had going on at Penn State and all of that. If you are beloved, you are beloved. If you're a figurehead, you're a figurehead. Now, he was good. They won 10 games a year for five straight years at Ole Miss. But at the end of the day, I don't think that he was the Ole Miss program. And I think Pete Golding is going to show that moving forward, in my opinion.
Okay, let's do the Golden conversation now. I was trying to think in the last segment, the last time we had a coach who was an interim who they just kind of rolled with and it ended up working. And the name that came up was Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame, where, and again, oddly, LSU involved in this with Brian Kelly. But they weren't playing for a national title the way Ole Miss was, but they had momentum and they went with Freeman. A little bit of a rocky first year, but now he's got the Irish flying high and one of the contenders for the national title. What have you seen? Because it's one thing to coach the team that's there and we can rally behind our coaches leaving. Let's go win it. And they did. Big, huge, massive win against Georgia. As you mentioned, 18 seconds for beating Miami in the national semifinal. But then what have you seen over the following months to lead you to believe that Pete Golding not only can work for this year, but can work long term at Ole Miss?
Yeah, whenever Ole Miss was going through what they went through in December and getting ready for their first playoff game and all of that, all of the pressure on everything, he didn't put a step wrong throughout that whole process. And then he signed a higher recruiting class in 3 days than Ole Miss had signed since Hugh Freeze. And he was able to put that together. And then he goes through spring practice and things are working out. The hires, bringing back John David Baker, who was the co-offensive coordinator with Charlie Weiss Jr., which means no changes of what's going on for Trinidad Chambliss and that. And he goes to SEC Media Days, and he got an applause when he walked off the stage, and it wasn't from Ole Miss media people. It was from media people that was just happy that he actually said some stuff and gave some red meat for people to chew on. And everything he has tried to do, he has handled unbelievably well. So I don't think that regular season, anything is going to be different. Now, there's a chance, in my opinion, that Ole Miss may have lucked, or bad lucked, or whatever you want to look at it, they may have lucked into an elite college football coach. And everything that has been done for the last 6 months is pointing that direction. Now you just have to go get wins on the field. You have potentially the most talented quarterback and running back duo in the country. You have talent all over the place. You just have to make the playoff this year. And if that happens, I think it could accelerate pretty rapidly down there.
Well, Stephen, the thing that jumps out to me is I see a number two reporting class, transfer portal class. You mentioned only four guys went to LSU. So here's the other thing that happens in these type of things. You get an alumni base that says, wait a second, you don't think we're good enough for you? Watch us prove what we're available or what we're capable of. And I see it in recruiting. I see it in portal. So Ole Miss seems to be incredibly organized on the NIL portal front, and that's coming through too. So maybe this Kiffin thing ends up being the best for everybody.
Yeah, like I said, it's a win-win situation. Pete Golding
said that at SEC Media Days. It's like, hey, he didn't want to be here. That happens. There's people that happens. There's players that happens. It just happens. I get this opportunity because of that happening. It's win-win, in my opinion. And I think if you just win games, if Ole Miss gets to a playoff again, it could be actually absolutely settled to where this is Pete Golding's program and the last 5 years didn't even happen. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. The 9-game SEC schedule is going to be interesting because instead of playing a Georgia State, you're playing South Carolina or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be difficult. That's 8 more losses that the conference is going to absorb. But I think if you can get into that tournament, it takes off real similar to, you mentioned an interim coach. Dabo Swinney was an interim coach.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the Ole Miss rise is kind of similar to what Clemson went through in the about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They needed Deshaun Watson to throw that pass to Hunter Renfrow to put some jet fuel on the fire to get everything burning. Ole Miss needs that moment.
Yeah, they dang close last year. Let's talk about the schedule this year. Before we get into it at large, I mean, can you even put into words what September 19th will be like there?
I can't imagine how toxic that day is going to be.
Me either.
It's one of those things where your audience probably doesn't follow the social media machinations around Ole Miss football, but as soon as that was announced as a night game, the Oxford Police Department just did the Daryl from the Office. Oh, yay. because that's going to be a full day of fights. The Grove is going to be a war zone. Yeah. If you've never been to the Grove, it's a 8 acres just palace of tailgating inside college football. It's going to be a battlefield that day. It just is. There's going to be people looking for trouble, and there's going to be people finding trouble. So I'm not looking forward to that side of it. I do think the game is going to be very fun and very well contested and all of that stuff, and that stadium atmosphere is going to be unbelievable. But the lead up to it that day, I think, is going to be problematic.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this schedule. You got to make sure that's not your Super Bowl. You come down a little bit at Florida, at Vandy, Missouri, but then that stretch of at Texas, Auburn at home, Georgia at home, at Oklahoma, that's a massive 4-game, and it looks like it's in 5 weeks type situation there. That if this team is a playoff team, that's where it will be decided, correct?
Yeah, and in my opinion, that is the season. If you make it through, listen, that game in Florida, the swamp can be a tricky place coming off of that type of game. So if you are not ready to play, John Sumrall and those guys down in Gainesville, they can get you. So if you make it through that unscathed and get to that road game at Texas and Auburn at home and Georgia at home and at Oklahoma, it will be very interesting. The benefit is a lot of the leaders on your roster this year beat all of those guys a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
They won all of those games. So it's not like you're going to walk in and get beat by the logo. So you have to go 1-0 every week and all of those coaching cliches you think of, because if not, every one of those can jump up and get you.
Steven, I'll get you out of here on this one. How will you determine success from your perspective for Pete Golding year one at Ole Miss? What's his minimum requirement for you to go, yeah, good first year?
I think 9, probably.
Okay.
If you look at the schedule, not necessarily the playoffs, although I think if this is going to be the first year that a 9-win team makes the playoff, in my opinion. But I think 9, one way or another, being on in the conversation for that is where he needs to be. And if he makes it to the playoffs, it's just, that's just jelly. Everybody can enjoy that.
Going to be a fun year down there, man, for sure. Enjoy it. Thank you so much for your time and giving us a little bit of it today.
All right. Appreciate it, man.
There he goes. Steven Willis, Locked On Ole Miss, joining on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We get you 3 things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Retirement from football hits everyone differently.
For Devere Posey and Dane Sanzenbacher, it means sitting around watching sports clips on the internet
and arguing about them.
Search for Didn't Catch That on YouTube and subscribe.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable.
The Fan.
Bo could quit today and become the school drop-off line coordinator.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, what do we have on the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, after this season, will Jeremiah Smith be considered the best Buckeye of all time? 62% say no.
What does he have to be to do to be considered that is the thing that is a that's your topic. And to me, I think it would be hard to argue if statistically he does what he did his first 2 years. And almost if he does either of winning the Heisman or being the best player on a second national championship team. Initially, in the first segment we talked about this, I thought he's got to do both. I'm not so sure he has to do both anymore. I think if he just does one of them, now you're not, he's not going to be undisputed. You got too much history and too many great players. But if his resume over 3 years is national championship as a freshman, three-time consensus first team All-American, Heisman Trophy winner, that's tough. I mean, that would trump O'Pace. That would trump most of what's been done here historically. He'd be way, way up there.
I think there's probably some people that will always think it's Archie and say the two Heismans trump everything. Mm-hmm. Unless you get two Heismans, you're not going to be the best. And I think there's some people that are always going to say that Orlando Pace is the best because they feel O'Pace is the best college football player ever.
Yeah.
So there's some people that are never going to change.
A Heisman and two national championships will do it.
That does it. I mean, that's what I said in the first. I mean, that's no dispute well, at that
and,
point.
And every Ohio State wide receiver record
wide receiving
ever.
Record. Yeah, that would do it. Case closed. One or the other, I think you could still make a very straightforward argument. You know, it'd be interesting. I've never talked to anybody, and there might not be anybody still around. I'd be very curious to talk to somebody about Archie's second Heisman. And if they were aware in the moment, I don't even know who that would be, who would be around from them, because that predates even like Tim and Dom and those guys. Like any sort of context on how that came about. Did people know in the moment how big of a deal that was to win a second straight Heisman? Were they aware that that would be something that would not be attained ever since and probably never will be again? I don't know if a book's been written about that. My guess is Jack Park probably wrote about it at some point. But somebody ever write a book around that second Heisman and how it came to about would be a fascinating thing to try to unearth a little bit. Time for three things on a Thursday.
Three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me, I had a meeting after work last night, ended up getting home, I don't know, all said and done, picked up NBC from football, ended up getting home 9:30, 9:40, something like that last night. And I got a text from my buddy Doc Meyer, my neighbor, who said, quote, this is an actual text, quote, you've got a pizza delivery guy in your yard. You've got high school girls on the basketball court in the backyard. Everything okay over there? Yeah. I'm sure everything's fine. I'm sure top men are on it. I'm sure all of it. I look in the living room. The blonde with Beamsy and Bootsy are watching one of the Spider-Man movies to prep for the new movie that apparently is coming out this week at a decibel that you could hear if you were in Lexington. And so they, I don't even know if they're aware of what's going on. Apparently NBC had his little lady friend over with his buddy and his lady friend. And so the rest is history. But I said, yeah, I'm sure we got top men on it, buddy. Thank you for the heads up.
Speaking of top men, it looks like UEFA is threatening to boycott the World Cup, men's and women's, if FIFA goes ahead with their privatization of the World Cup and their tournaments. So FIFA's trying to sell the thing to private equity, and UEFA, which is the European football governing body, saying they just won't have, they won't participate. They want nothing to do with this. And so I hope more governing bodies of football, of soccer around the world take notice and do the same.
You don't need FIFA.
You don't need FIFA for anything. You all
they
can
need
do it.
UEFA.
Yeah, they absolutely need UEFA.
You don't need FIFA. You could do FIFA, CONMEBOL, CONCACAF. You could, I mean, it's not that hard to do it, to put this thing on.
First thing for me, we talked earlier a little bit about what happened with the Columbus Blue Jackets yesterday and them simulcasting their TV broadcast over their radio and Bob McElligott getting let go after 17 years with the team. And it all stinks and it all sucks. Just one thing, hopefully, for Blue Jackets fans in the future. There were two teams in the past, one of which being the New York Islanders, that did this, and then they went back to a radio broadcast. And the ironic thing about that with the Islanders is I believe Steve Mears ended up losing his job in that, however that went, if I remember correctly. So hopefully we'll get a radio broadcast of the Blue Jackets back sometime soon. Hopefully if a TV partner comes along and takes the broadcast, then we can get back to that.
Yeah, would be nice. Number two for me, picked up NBC from football. It was like a mini camp thing that they were doing. 2-a-day start on Friday night. Guys, it was like 74 and breezy. We're back, baby. We're back. Like, maybe August isn't going to be brutal. Like, we're still in July. It felt like September. Spectacular last night picking up NBC from football. Got me in the mood.
Second thing for me, and even as somebody who consumes a lot of coffee, what Dunkin' Donuts is doing is just a little bit too much. They're going to be bringing back, and I didn't know they had this, so this is an introduction to me, of their iced drink buckets. So this is a giant 48-ounce bucket of cold brew coffee.
And how big?
48 ounces. And with that, they're going to have a custom cup holder so you can put your bucket of coffee into your car holder. Holder.
Oh, 48 ounces.
That's doing a lot.
By the way, Reese, like, how much sugar's in that sucker?
That's a good question. Depending on the beverage, could be a lot, could be none.
Oh, my God. 48 ounces of coffee. I don't even know if that's safe.
$13 worth is for one fill of that thing.
God.
Second thing for me, if you think you have it bad, Blue Jackets fans, go look up what the Portland Trailblazers are doing with their broadcast. Fish put me on to this earlier today. They are cutting longtime broadcasters, longtime producers. They're cutting their graphics department. They are going absolutely bare bones for all of their TV broadcasts this year for the Portland Trailblazers.
I'm going to tell you what he's doing. I'll make this my number three. He's doing what they did to the Seattle Supersonics.
Mm-hmm.
And he is being offensive to a legendary and great fan base and a great city that is only theirs. It's Portland's awesome. And they only have the Blazers. And that's it. And he's trying to muscle his way to Las Vegas, is my guess, is what he's trying to do. If not that, he's going to muscle his way to Seattle because the Seattle team will be worth more if Portland's not there, which is also tells you how little he knows about that area. Nobody in Seattle gives a damn about Portland and vice versa. In fact, they don't really like each other particularly well. So that dude is trying to, he's doing what Precourt did here. That's what he's doing.
Is that Tom Dundon who owns them now?
Yes, he owns the Carolina Hurricanes, too. And that's what I thought yesterday, where it's he passed on the Vegas expansion team for the NBA because the Portland Trailblazers were worth, or he had to pay significantly less to get the Trailblazers, and then when he moves them, he does not have to pay the expansion fee.
He's got to pay a relocation fee, but it's not an expansion fee. Mm-hmm. By the way, they could go to Raleigh, too. I think he owns that building in Raleigh. So there's that, too, if he wanted to do that.
Yeah.
It's on Adam Silver to not properly vet, much like it was on David Stern to not properly vet Oklahoma City.
I was just about to say, like, the commissioner of the league needs to step in or should have done a better job vetting because he's playing the same kind of game he played with Carolina.
Yep.
Final thing for me, don't go anywhere. Rothman and Ice have you covered on your Thursday afternoon. They'll head over to Big Ten Media Days at 12:30 and talk with Patrick Murphy. And then it's a Gold Jacket Thursday at 2:30. Hall of Famer John Riggins.
Oh, wow. Riggo. That's fantastic. That'll be an interesting one. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. We are back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around. Call